All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from this.
All right. Welcome. It'll be a Thursday morning here. It's Wednesday night. We'll get into Thursday morning here. And I'm Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is my producer. Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. We're live in the Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here, until 4 a.m. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk to our friend Dan Feinberg, who is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on at The Fine Print, and that's F-I-E-N, at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we always talk about TV, lots of TV to talk about this evening and this morning. And we're also going to talk to Valerie Genghis, who is an author and a meditation expert and a near-death experience person. She's a speaker, transformative life coach, and she specializes in helping people gain a deeper understanding of who they are so they can genuinely thrive every day. She also wrote a book called Enlightenment is Sexy. And we'll talk to Valerie coming up after 1 o'clock. The sign-stealing scandal with the Houston Astros has blown up. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and the possibility of Tom Brady coming to the Bears, which my producer Tom Hush is you said that you will actually buy a Bears jersey with Tom Brady's name on it if they do.
Literally day one. Day one. On field, $200 stitched.
Yeah.
Anything.
Okay. He's excited about that. Ben & Jerry's has released a new ice cream flavor called Netflix and Chilled. I don't know. I'm not sure I want to know what that is. But we're going to talk about favorite movie snacks and favorite candy movie candy of all time. We have a Blackhawks Express. The Blackhawks are on a roll, man. They should just stay in Canada. Just stay in Canada, which they are going to do because the next game is Saturday against Toronto. But we'll play back the Blackhawks Express. So that is all coming up. We would love to hear from you. You can call or text us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's happening on the show this evening into this morning. And I want to say hello again to my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good. Rocky Johnson, The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's father passed away.
Yeah.
Legendary wrestler. He was 75. So we're going to talk about wrestling, too. Some of the best wrestlers of all time. I was sad to see that, obviously. And but he was great. And obviously his son became one of the most legendary wrestlers of all time as well. And now he's one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
Yeah, right?
I mean, it's insane.
He basically wrote the book on how to actually transition and become something.
It's really something. Because I remember back in the 90s, you know, when, you know, Rocky Johnson at the time, when The Rock showed up. Wrestling, and he became a superstar, obviously, in the WWF at that time. And great wrestler, but amazing on the mic, and so charismatic. And then when the Mummy comes out, all of a sudden, you know, you know, he the Scorpion King is you know, the spinoff becomes a big hit, makes movies like The Rundown, and then became the guy who saved franchises. And now he's just like one of the biggest movie stars in the world who makes millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I like to see that transition happen, you know, how he changed. I remember when he hosted Saturday Night Live. And the Big Show showed up, and Triple H and Mick Foley. This was at the time when, like, The Rock was at the top of his game in the WWE, and he was terrific on SNL the first time he hosted. He's hosted a few times, but the very first time, that was a really funny episode. So, but anyway, Rocky Johnson passed away. The Rock's dad, and we're going to talk about wrestling as well. So there's a lot happening this morning, and we would love to hear from you. It's 312-981-7200, and we will continue, and the show continues with Dan Feinberg, the distinguished TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. We're going to catch up with him on the Golden Globes, a new TV show that I love called Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. And did you watch it? Let me know what you thought. Text us. Call us. 312-981-7200. And Dan Feinberg coming up.
We're gonna have our TV party tonight.
Alright!
We're gonna have our TV
party, alright!
Tonight!
Saturday Night Live! Monday Night Football! Jefferson!
I wouldn't be without my TV
party. Alright, Nick DiGilio, the show continues. Nick DiGilio here until 4 a.m. We're live in the Skyline studio. Tom Hush is my producer. Vic Vaughn will give you the news throughout the night and the morning. 312-981-7200. We want you to join us. We are talking TV right now. Dan Feinberg is a regular guest here on the show. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk television. And he is with us this morning, or this evening. Let's welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
How you been?
I'm okay. I'm right in the middle of the TCA press tour, and so I'm sort of hanging on by a thread, but I'm excited to talk.
Well, let's first of all, tell everyone about the TCA.
For sure. As regular listeners know, and as others may not know, the TCA press tour is the biannual convention of the nation's TV critics. We're in Pasadena this winter, and basically it's 2 weeks of every broadcast network, cable network, and many, many streaming platforms coming in and presenting their executives, their upcoming programming, and et cetera, to 200-plus of the nation's finest TV critics and reporters who ask questions and talk to talent and basically wear ourselves down until we're very, very exhausted, but also excited about all the TV to come.
Well, what's been happening so far?
We are now, we're over the halfway point. So we have had our visits from all of the various broadcast networks, with the exception of the CW. The CW presented all of their shows at the summer press tour in Beverly Hills. So they basically took the tour off, which is okay. They'll be back. And we are in the early phases of the cable part of the tour. So today was Warner Brothers Media Day, which meant HBO, TBS, TNT, and a first panel for the upcoming HBO Max digital platform, which, if we're being honest, we're all completely still trying to figure out.
So how much longer are you going to be there?
We are done on Sunday, so I guess that is 4 more days. This is a slightly shorter tour because of, again, CW taking the time off. I think PBS this time around was only 1 day. Sometimes it's 2. So sometimes the press tour can be as many as 15 or 16 days. I believe this one is 13, which is plenty long, trust me.
Okay. All right. We're talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic from The Hollywood Reporter, regular guest on the show. We talk television every couple of weeks here. 312-981-7200 is the number for talk and text. We'd love to hear from you. Oh, so the Golden Globes happened in between the last time you were here and now, and you did write about it. What are some of your thoughts about the Golden Globes?
Oh, God, man, that feels like about a zillion years ago.
It does, doesn't it? It does.
Wow. I feel like it was a zillion years ago, and I feel like we've gone through like 15 different media cycles on it, because there was the whole Ricky Gervais crazy truth-teller cycle, and then there was the media hates Ricky Gervais crazy truth-teller cycle because Ricky Gervais is the only truth-teller in the world, and the media is in collusion with Hollywood, and so that cycle happened. And then Ricky Gervais did the everyone doesn't believe in the First Amendment something tweet cycle, and then NBC announced that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were going to be hosting, and some people went, yay, and other people went, it's because Ricky Gervais is the only truth teller left in the world.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's lots of different news cycles. When it comes to the actual Golden Globes, there were some good awards, you know, as long as Succession wins for drama series and Fleabag wins for comedy, I can be like, okay, those are the shows I like. So, yay, you know, even if I have problems, those are the shows I like.
Now, as far as the broadcast itself goes, you know, the bits, the presentations, all of that stuff, what did you think? What were some of the things that you, because I know you took, you know, generous notes while you were watching or, you know, you have opinions on the broadcast itself. What were some of the highlights? What were some of the lowlights in terms of the broadcast itself, not just the awards?
I thought that, you know, with the Globes, they've arranged the telecast such that it's going to concentrate on the speeches. That's the way that they set the show up. It's not like the Oscars or the Emmys where they try to, you know, sneak in a musical number or where they do lots of montages of the year's best whatever. You know, this year they even didn't even do an in memoriam segment, which,
yeah,
you know, I'm not sure a great choice.
I thought, you know, in the monologue, Ricky Gervais, you know, mentioned that, and I thought it was a joke, you know, because he made it, you know, I thought it was a joke, and then, like, they didn't do an in memoriam. They really didn't do it.
I feel like they sort of rotate back and forth on the Globes as to whether they do it, and I don't understand that as a principle, you know, like, just some years you decide that not enough important people died, but even that doesn't make sense, because there were plenty of big names who died. I don't think that Ricky Gervais was being serious with the suggestion that it was too white.
But
other than that, but no. So what the show is set up around is these. It was formerly won. It was the Cecil B. DeMille Award for many, many years, and then last year they added the Carol Burnett Award, so there was a TV equivalent.
Right.
And that's what the show is built around at this point. And if you get good speeches from the winners of those two awards, it goes a long way to making the show good. And so I thought that Ellen DeGeneres gave a very good, very Ellen-y, sort of digressive, amusing, rambling speech where she knew exactly what she was doing, and that was very funny. I thought Kate McKinnon's introduction to her was fantastic.
I did too. I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was absolutely beautiful.
And I thought that Tom Hanks' speech was great. You know, not that we're supposed to be in any way surprised when Tom Hanks turns out to be wise and gracious and thoughtful and emotional, even when battling a cold or flu.
But, right.
So you have those things, and those things were great. And then there were, I thought, a handful of really good speeches throughout the night, and it moved reasonably well. You know, they ran out of time towards the end, and finally they started having to cut people off at the most important awards of the night, which is never ideal. But it was an okay show. It's, you know, okay. And at this point, okay is better than, it's better than the Emmys. The Emmys were horrible.
Yeah.
The Oscars were pretty good. So let's just say we're putting the Golden Globes somewhere between those two, but closer to the Oscars than to the Emmys, which were just really, really bad.
Gotcha. Dan Feinberg is with us. We are talking with him. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And he joins us every couple of weeks, and we're talking television right now. So, I have to tell you, Dan, I loved the pilot of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. I happen to love Jane Levy a lot. And we got a text here from the 301 who says, loved Zoe's remarkable playlist. Extraordinary Playlist, and I got my wife and daughter to watch it, and they liked it too. So people are enjoying it. What are your thoughts on that? And also, what is going on where, you know, they debuted the thing and now it doesn't come back for over a month?
They did a panel at Press Tour over the weekend, I guess, and it was a very, very good panel. Everybody involved was very emotional and amusing, and everyone told their funny stories. So, for example, you had Mary Steenburgen telling her story about her rather unusual post-surgery musical brilliance thing that she has, which is a remarkable medical condition that is a little bit like the plot of the show, and rather remarkable. And the creator of the show talked about how it's loosely based on his own story, not so much the musical part, but about his ailing father, and so the emotional connection he has with that, and that was very emotional. No one was able to give a good explanation for why they decided to present it the way that they did with the episode last week and then a month wait. I remain perplexed by it. Everyone can say things like, oh, Glee did the same thing, but Glee didn't really do the same thing. Glee aired one episode in a special time slot at the end of one season, spent an entire summer promoting and re-airing it, and then brought it back the next season, which was not really the same thing. This is kind of like you air one episode, people like it, and then you take a hiatus until they forget about it. I don't know.
It's a weird thing. By the way, Dan, can you explain the Mary Steenburgen condition?
It's very complicated. She underwent a medical procedure over a decade ago, and she woke up out of anesthesia, and she was suddenly hearing music all around her, and it's an Oliver Sacks style condition, you know, and okay. it's except in real life, you know, she was never musical, and suddenly she's hearing songs, and she subsequently has become a successful songwriter, and she is collaborating with artists in Nashville. One of her songs was on the Oscar shortlist this year, and so here she is now, and she has a key supporting role in a TV show about a woman who undergoes a medical procedure and suddenly is able to hear music all around her.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's not wholly a coincidence, because people know this story and she's now been telling it a lot lately, but it's still at least somewhat a coincidence. It's not why they cast her in this. They cast her because she's Mary Steenburgen and she's fantastic.
Right.
So, but it's an added benefit that she gets to keep telling this story to promote the show.
Yeah, for folks who don't know, you know, the story, I just wanted to make it clarified. But yeah, I mean, in the show itself, what are your thoughts on it? Because I loved it. I laughed. I cried. Everything that it was meant to do to a person watching it, it did to me very successfully. And again, the lead is someone that I just love her. So what are your thoughts on the show?
I agree that it is a wonderful starring vehicle for Jane Levy, and she has a wonderful scene at the start of the second episode, provided people still remember the show existed in a month, which I hope they do, because it is a charming, likable show. To me, I felt a little bit kind of yanked around and manipulated by the more dramatic, emotional stuff, and yet I absolutely 100% started crying at the moment that everyone is supposed to start crying involving Peter Gallagher.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Oh my God. I was a mess.
It works completely. And on the list of sort of manipulative, tear jerking shows that NBC has basically been trying to churn out since This Is Us made everyone cry and became a phenomenon, I find this much more appealing than, well, basically all of them, because it also did make me smile, and I enjoyed the musical moments. I loved the choreography, which comes from
Mandy Moore.
So You Think You Can Dance veteran Mandy Moore, who does terrific work. I enjoy it. And the second episode is also very good, and the song that Peter Gallagher gets to do in the second episode is much better suited to his voice. I thought it was not a great match of Peter Gallagher's voice, and the first song he gets to sing, the next one is much better.
Okay. All right, well, I loved it, and I can't wait to see it when it comes back. Dan, we'll continue, and Dan Feinberg is with us. And Dan, hold on, we're continuing right now, and we'll be back And we're going to talk about Party of Five, the remake of Party of Five. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio Show continues. Nick DiGilio, it's the Nick DiGilio Show on a Wednesday into Thursday morning. Tom Hush is my producer. Vic Vaughn is in the news, and we are here until 4 a.m. And we continue our TV roundup with Dan Feinberg of The Hollywood Reporter, and we are going to talk about the remake of the Party of Five show. Do you think the show deserves a remake, and did you watch the original? You can shoot us a text or call us at 312-981-7200. And Dan, we continue. So Party of Five was one of those shows that I loved. Party of Five, and I was always a big fan of it, even though they cried. Everybody cried on every episode. But I was a big fan of the show. Were you a fan of the original?
I was a hit and miss fan of the original. I definitely watched it at the beginning, and I gradually watched it less and less, and then by the end I was no longer watching it. But definitely in the beginning I watched a lot of Party of Five. Mm-hmm.
And so the reboot, as so many shows and things are being rebooted, is on Freeform, where people can, if they can find that.
Freeform's easier to find than a lot of the things that we tell people to look for TV on. Freeform is the artist formerly known as ABC Family, so you can probably dig it up on your cable dial.
Right. So how is the reboot? And tell us about
it. The reboot is... Yeah, the reboot is fine, and it's, I would even say, good. It's it comes from the same creators, Amy Littman and Chris Kaiser, and it fulfills what, for me, is probably the number one prerequisite for any remake, reboot, whatever we're calling it, revival, whatever we're calling anything. This is more of a straight-up remake. It's, you know, top to bottom, no overlapping characters or anything. It has a purpose. It has a reason to want to retell this story again. It's not just saying, okay, well, here's another family whose parents died and they have to, you know, come together again and whatever. They're not prepared, but they love each other and they're sad, and that's all there is. The backdrop of the story is that it's a Los Angeles family, and the parents own a restaurant, and then they get busted by ICE, and it turns out that the parents came into the country illegally, and after a very little wrangling, they're deported to Mexico, and that leaves the five children, or the four children, because one of them's a baby, not really raising anybody, more being raised. You know, they have to find a way to move on, and so, you know, their life is obviously upended, and they all have responsibilities forced upon them, and they all had this gap in their life where their parents used to be, but in this iteration the parents are not dead, and therefore they are a factor. They're able to Skype with the family, so it produces a different dynamic, but there are a lot of similar things to it, and I really appreciated that. And the young cast is decent. I don't think that any of them are necessarily instant breakouts, and certainly with the original Party of Five, there really were three or four breakouts.
Absolutely. Yeah. By the way, we're talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking TV as we do every couple of weeks. Okay, continue, Dan.
Sure. So, yeah, I don't know that there is an instant Matthew Fox here, an instant Scott Wolf, an instant Jennifer Love Hewitt. I don't know that there is one, but they're all good. They're all solid. They're all better in the second episode than they are in the first, which I think is a nice thing. It shows kind of maturing into this world. And I like the wrinkles to the storytelling. I like that it seems to have a reason for wanting to have these characters in this world going through this drama. And there are so many remakes and reboots out there of everything, and there was no reason for CBS to reboot Magnum or Hawaii Five-0 other than they had familiar titles. And right. so CBS said, we're going to do it, and people watched. And that's fine if people wanted to watch it. But you watch this Party of Five, and it has a reason. It has things that the creators wanted to say. And for some people, those things are going to come across as too political, and it will probably bother them or make them unhappy. And that's, you know, they shouldn't watch.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna give it a shot. And I think it's an interesting angle that the parents are still a part of the show. I find that really interesting and an interesting change in the dynamic of what the show is actually about.
Yeah, it gives it a wrinkle. And, you know, heaven knows the family is still messed up by the fact that their parents just got deported to Mexico. It still has the impact of making people cry constantly.
Yeah,
so if
what
you liked about Party of Five is that they cried every episode, don't worry. They do plenty of that in the new version.
Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and we're talking television. Here's a call from Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
I just wanted to go back to Zoe's extraordinary playlist.
Sure.
Oh my gosh, I just loved that. That was so funny, so creative, very, very different. It was unexpected. I just loved it.
Yeah.
But I wanted to say that if you go on Spotify and you search Zoe's extraordinary playlist, you can get the playlist. You can get her playlist from her head, and it's some of them are the original songs by the original artists, and others are from the act. You know, it's like the soundtrack of the show.
Yeah.
So I'm just throwing that out there.
Oh, so you can go
to kind of fun.
Go to Spotify and get the playlist. That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jill.
Sure.
Okay. What Dan? Any idea what the music budget is on that show?
the answer seems to be a pretty fair amount.
Yeah, I mean, when you start off with
a press tour, and obviously they aren't going to sit there and tell us, oh, well, we paid, you know, $1.5 million for that Beatles song, and, you know, however
I was going to say, when you start off with a big musical number to Help, you're like, I was just like, wow. Holy cow.
I was surprised by the fact that they did the entire full song. You know, you do a verse of Help, and you're like, okay, that probably cost enough. No, they did Help.
Yeah, they did.
So, no, a fair amount is the answer.
It's, okay.
They committed, and obviously the degree to which they committed in the early episodes means they need to at least come close to doing that going forward, or else viewers are going to almost instantly go, wait, there were six great songs in the first episode.
Right.
Why are there two in this one?
Right.
But we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're going to continue to talk with Dan about television. We will continue to ask you to call us or text us at 312-981-7200. Lots more TV to talk about right here on 720 WGN as we continue. She got the way to move me, Jared. She got the way to move me. She got the way to move me, Jared. She got the way to move me. All right. Nick DiGilio. Nick DiGilio here till 4 a.m. We will be talking with an author and an expert on transcendental meditation, Valerie Genghis, a little later. And Tom Hush is my producer. He is here handling the phones as well. And we continue. And Triple Play Thursday continues. Every night / morning on the show, you make the call on what songs we play when we come back from break and news. And we have a theme every morning for the music bumps. And this morning is Triple Play Thursday. And that means you request one artist and three songs, and we'll play them during the breaks, after the breaks. 312-981-7200. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, regular on the show, talks with us about television every couple of weeks, and we continue our conversation. Dan, let's talk a little bit about The Hunt for the Bone Collector. Now, I saw the Denzel Washington movie all those years ago, and it's obviously based on the same story, correct?
It is indeed, and first thing of most importance is that we need to emphasize that the entire title is not Hunt for the Bone Collector. It is Lincoln Rhyme,
right.
Hunt for the Bone Collector. Because, yeah.
All right.
It is one of the more cumbersome TV titles in recent years. The way that they explained it at press tour was, well, initially it was called Lincoln when they announced it last year, and to the surprise of some people, apparently. It turns out that most people searching on the internet for the word Lincoln are not actually looking for a Denzel Washington movie or Jeffrey Deaver book. They're curious about a former president of the United States, which is a little, odd.
Right.
So thus they embellished it, but they wanted to emphasize that it is not, at least going forward, only going to be the plot of the movie The Bone Collector. It's going to be other Lincoln Rhyme novels, because Jeffrey Deaver has written many of them. So, yes, this one is starting with the premise of a largely forgettable Denzel Washington and Angelina Jolie movie. Their parts are being played here by Ariel Kebble, obviously playing the Angelina Jolie role,
right,
and by Russell Hornsby playing the Denzel Washington role. And it's a sort of serial killer investigation story with, very, very familiar twists. There's a killer, and obviously Lincoln Rhyme wants to get him, because in the opening scene of the show, Lincoln Rhyme is left paralyzed after one of the serial killer's hijinks, and now he's grumpy and grouchy and bedridden. And Ariel Kebble plays a new recruit who has some of the same attention to detail that Lincoln has. So she becomes both his protege, but also his eyes and ears in investigating. And honestly, once you get past what is truly a horrible and cumbersome title, the show itself is average. It's fine, kind of, to a low degree. I don't want to be any more enthusiastic than that. It's okay. Russell Hornsby is very good. He's a tremendous actor. If people have seen Grimm or The Hate U Give or 7 Seconds, they know that he's just great.
He's
good here. They've kind of, if you remember the movie at all, and most people who saw the movie
I don't remember it. And I've seen it.
Basically, he's really grouchy and really antisocial. And basically, obviously, his condition has left him embittered. And the whole point is he's awful to everybody. And so it becomes a scenario in which the interactions with this young detective help bring him back to his humanity, etc. In this interpretation, he's not really all that angry. He's just a little snippy. And no one would be so offended by this guy that they would stop working with him forever. They would just be like, oh, he's Lincoln Rhyme. He's on the hunt for the Bone Collector.
Yeah.
Whatever. And so that takes away a lot of the edge. There's very little edge. And if you are one of the people whose idea of a NBC crime procedural from a novel and a movie adaptation is Hannibal, this is not that by any stretch of the imagination. This is kind of by the numbers, but the cast is good enough to make it watchable. Watchable.
Yeah, now,
that would be Lincoln Rhyme and the full title, as I like to say, because good gracious, it's a bad title. Lincoln Rhyme, : Hunt for the Bone Collector.
Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us. Joins us every couple of weeks. He's a great TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Dan Feinberg, Hollywood Reporter, joins us. I just want to mention, Dan, the last episode of Evil, I happen to be a medical slash hospital phobe, okay? It's just a thing. I was traumatized by the last episode of Evil, and I continue to love that show more and more every week. But my God, that episode. Oh.
You're only going to have 2 more weeks to love it, unfortunately, for this season. It is wrapping up its first season next Thursday. And, of course, it has already been renewed, so no one needs to worry.
Okay.
And I think this is a show where the ratings are not spectacular, but I think a lot of people have just been waiting for Evil to end its first season, and then they're like, "Whoa, we're going to binge it," and I hope people do, because it is really, at this point, so far above average by broadcast. Lincoln Rhyme, Hunt for the Bone Collector is an average network procedural, Evil is wildly above average.
Yeah, it is so good. And for people who don't know, it's a show about three people who sort of basically either debunk or investigate supernatural things that happened or possessions and things like that. Each person has a different, you know, one person is a priest who believes in the supernatural and has faith. One is a debunker, and one is the logical, like, sort of lawyer of the group. And it's great, and it's really, really great. It's on CBS on Thursday nights at 9. So Dan, a couple of texts have come in.
Excellent.
Veronica wants to know where I can see the first episode of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
It would be my assumption that it is on Hulu. That would be where NBC shows usually go. And
yeah.
I would assume that NBC wants to make that first episode available for as many people as possible during the 5-week hiatus between episodes.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it is, I know it's available on NBC on demand. If you happen to have the on demand, you can get the on demand, but it is on Hulu. So you can get it on Hulu, you can get it on NBC on demand, and I recommend it highly. How about this? 312 says, speaking of reboots, how are the CBS Friday night lineups of Hawaii 50 and Magnum PI and Blue Bloods doing in the ratings?
Those shows just chug along. That is why they are there, is because they are remarkably steady. They don't do the youngest, most demographically desirable audience, and the kind of audience that other networks necessarily might like, but even that they probably do better than what most of the other networks are doing on a Friday night. And then they do just a general huge, relatively speaking, again, by standards of broadcast television in 2020, overall audience. So yeah, those shows are just chugging along, and certainly the remarkable venerability of Blue Bloods remains one of the more remarkable stories on television.
It is absolutely there, but there are a hardcore group of people who love those shows and they keep watching. Okay, Dan Feinberg.
Absolutely, and bless them. You know, provided I don't have to review those shows, I am more than happy for those shows to continue to just churn out episodes.
Okay, all right. Dan Feinberg is with us. We'll continue talking TV after the news as the show continues.
Right, yes. And the first people would know him from Freedom Land and Clockers, among other books.
Right, and The Wire, and The Wire.
Yes, and of course, and for many TV projects, including The Wire, of course.
Yeah.
So, and the first couple episodes are directed by Emmy winner Jason Bateman of Ozark fame, and also co-star Emmy winner Jason Bateman of Ozark fame. And it's the story of a small town murder investigation into the horrifying death of a young boy. It's being conducted by a detective played by Ben Mendelsohn, and as the series begins, he is very, very certain that all signs, all evidence point in the direction of a beloved local baseball coach played by Jason Bateman, and he makes a very high profile arrest. But in the immediate aftermath of the arrest, the accused begins protesting that he clearly could not have done it. He has video evidence that he was in an entirely different city when the crime took place. So what do you do when all of one kind of evidence points in one direction, and yet a whole other assortment of evidence points in another direction? Well, this is one of those Stephen King stories. This is The Outsider on HBO that is kind of halfway between supernatural and not supernatural. And so if people watched the premiere that launched last weekend, we're still in the early non-supernatural phases, but keep going a couple weeks and you'll get towards the supernatural, which features the arrival of newly minted double Oscar nominee Cynthia Erivo as Holly Gibney. And Holly Gibney is a character who Stephen King fans will know and in all likelihood love, because she is a key figure in the Mr. Mercedes trilogy, which has already been adapted over at the artist formerly known as Audience Network, with Justine Lupe as the character, as the Holly Gibney character. So minor confusion there for the five people who know what Audience Network is.
Right.
I'm when it comes to The Outsider, I've seen 6 of the 10 episodes, and I'm not completely sure that either of the two things it is works as well as it should. I don't know it's wholly successful as a gritty detective thriller. I don't know it's wholly successful as a eerie supernatural thriller. But Ben Mendelsohn is always interesting to watch. And Cynthia Erivo is giving an interesting performance that's very different from what Justine Lupo is doing on Mr. Mercedes. So it's interesting. I just wish I was a little bit more gripped by any of the specific elements in The Outsider on HBO.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. What about this Cheer on Netflix? By the way, we're talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and he joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. So tell us about Cheer.
I love Cheer. Okay. It's just as simple as that. And I hope people have been discovering this, and I've been seeing people on Twitter finding it. We are in the middle of a cheerleading cultural renaissance. Last time I was on, I told you and listeners to watch Dare Me on USA. Did you check out Dare Me?
Yes, I did, and I liked it very much.
Excellent. I hope that that other people will check it out as well. It's a scripted show, and it's a thriller, and so it's not the same thing. Cheer on Netflix, which premiered a week or two ago, is a 6-part documentary series from many of the same people who did Last Chance U, which is about junior college football. And Last Chance U is also a terrific show. If you like sports documentaries, chances are good that you have been exposed to Last Chance U already. And it's really just a wonderfully satisfying series of character portraits looking at the cheerleading team, national championship winning competitive cheerleading team at Navarro College in Texas. From the coach, Monica Aldana, who is basically turned a non-existing program into a national championship squad, and looking at 4 or 5 or 6 of the cheerleaders on her team of varying degrees of previous successes. There's one girl who has 50,000 followers on Instagram and who is already kind of a youth cheerleading institution. But then there's another girl who grew up in Wyoming and only knew cheerleading as sort of, you know, sideline rah-rah cheerleading and is new to this world of ultra-athletic cheerleading that they do at Navarro. And at times it's funny, it's utterly harrowing because the sheer number of injuries that people go through in this is astonishing. People are constantly falling from 15 feet in the air. They're breaking bones. They're pulling muscles. They're falling on their heads. It's inspiring. It's exciting. And with only 6 episodes, it just goes by so fast. And it's just so enjoyable and covers so much terrain. It's just a really, really pleasant show to watch, even if it often makes you kind of outraged and kind of uncomfortable and a little bit scared for some of these people. You just invest in them really, really quickly. And I've been seeing a lot of people watching it. It's Cheer on Netflix. And if it sounds at all interesting, I'm sure you will enjoy it. If it's not your thing, that's one thing. But if you like the sort of enjoyable athletics mixed with just really people you care about really, really quickly, it's a good show.
Okay, that's great. Dan, can you hang out with us for another segment?
Sure, I can give you another segment.
Okay, outstanding. Dan Feinberg will continue to talk TV, and we will continue to talk to you, and you can contact us, text. You can call us at 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg continues to talk television. Nick DiGilio here in the Skyline Studio as we continue through this Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday. That's, you program our music that we listen to coming back from the news and breaks. And Triple Play Thursday will begin in just a little bit. And that's where you request one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 as we continue. Dan Feinberg is with us. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and he joins us every 2 weeks to talk television. And as we continue our conversation, Dan, I am really curious about 68 Whiskey, which is on the Paramount Network.
Paramount Network would go down as one of the much more difficult to find networks than Freeform, as discussed earlier. But as a reminder, Paramount Network is the network formerly known as Spike.
Right.
So anyone who watches Bar Rescue already knows it.
Right.
And I know you do.
Right, I do. Yes, I do.
So yes, 68 Whiskey it's based on an Israeli format, one that I do not know, Charlie Gulf 1. But it is created by Roberto Benabib, and it's the story of a group of medics in Afghanistan, and it is so very, very, very influenced by MASH that they would probably have called it MASH, except that then you have a ridiculously high bar that you have to reach, and
right. No
one necessarily knows what Charlie Gulf 1 is, so thus they avoided that. It is largely a cast of people who your listeners will not know. The lead is an Irish actor, Sam Keeley. He's playing basically the Hawkeye character. Other actors include Gage Golightly, who has been in a bunch of things. Maybe people will recognize her. And Christina Rodlow, who was in the most recent series, the season of The Terror, Terror Infamy on AMC. And yeah, it's sort of a lot of kind of medical hijinks or, you know, general hijinks. Everyone has a scam. Everyone has an angle. Everyone's trying to make a few extra bucks. And so, you know, people are selling expired prescriptions and they're coming into large amounts of hashish and stuff. It's not as funny as it should be. And it's not as absurd as it should be, but every once in a while it has these moments that feel in that, I don't know, that catch 22 kind of vibe. 68 Whiskey also, though, has these outlandish plot points that are probably too big for the show to handle, and I didn't care about almost any of them. There's a mercenary force that's at the same base, and so there are clashes between the army forces and the independent contractors, and the independent contractors might be doing something shady in the desert that may involve, I don't even know what. It could involve treasure, it could involve drugs, it could involve aliens, who even knows. None of that was all that interesting. Several of the characters have backstories that are simple, but then suddenly involve big twists as well. None of that works. But every once in a while, when the characters are just interacting, they're kind of funny and there's a little bit of charm to it. So 68 Whiskey for me is not a total success, but the creator's last show was HBO's The Brink, which starred Tim Robbins and Jack Black, and was also attempting to be a wartime satire. And it was horrible. And it was one of the bigger bombs, I would say, in recent years on TV. It was canceled after a season, and with that much star power, that was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
But it was also a really bad show. And this is much better than that. This really does have potential. I'm just curious. I've seen three episodes, and I'll be curious to see which direction it steers into. If it steers into the kind of big serialized mythology, whatever levels, I can, you know, go elsewhere. I don't particularly need this. But I can see how there could be a MASH light style show that I could like in 68 Whiskey.
Okay. That's 68 Whiskey on the Paramount Network. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And we talk TV every couple of weeks. Dan, I'm a big fan of Awkwafina. Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, is on Comedy Central. Tell me about it.
if you are a big fan of Awkwafina, I suspect you will probably find Awkwafina is Nora from Queens to be charming and pleasant and often funny. It's not breakout funny. Like, you know, you want it to be just a little bit funnier at every turn. You want it to be just a little bit more raucous. Basically, what you want is for it to be a little bit more Broad City. But it's a little Broad City, and it has some of the same background creative forces as Broad City. Lucia Agnello directed the pilot, and she was a regular director on Broad City. Yeah, and so you know that that's what they're going for somewhat. But it's a semi-autobiographical story about Awkwafina, who was indeed born Nora Lum, and that is the character's name, and did indeed live in Queens. And she sort of plays this version of herself as a 27-year-old young woman who's living with her father, played by B.D. Wong, who's really great, and living with her grandmother, played by Lori Tan Chin, who some people will know from Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of, she doesn't have a job, she doesn't have a purpose, and so she does a bunch of odd jobs. So she's a very, very bad driver for a rideshare service, and she spends one episode working as a receptionist for a very, very bad real estate agent. And there are occasional wacky hijinks. There's an episode in Atlantic City, etc. But it's mostly a lot of Awkwafina being Awkwafina. And so if you know her sense of humor going back to her days as a semi-jokey rapper, it's raunchy. It's very specific to her background, which is half Chinese, half Korean. And it's funny. It could be funnier, but it's already been renewed for a second season. And I can easily see how this show could just become a real pleasure to watch on a weekly basis. I chuckled frequently throughout the, I think, five episodes I've seen. It's likable. If you don't like the thing Awkwafina does, you probably won't like it. But if you do, Awkwafina is Nora from Queens on Comedy Central is quite amusing.
And it premieres on January 22nd, right, on Wednesday?
Correct.
Okay, and make sure everybody tunes into that. It'll be on January 22nd. By the way, I was looking at your review. Bowen Yang is in it.
Yes, Bowen Yang, who has been one of the breakouts of this season on Saturday Night Live, plays Nora's cousin, who she constantly has to get compared to because he is wildly successful. And it's not a regular part. I think he's in about half of the episodes I've seen, but he's very funny, as anyone watching SNL will know, and it's been a big year in terms of Bowen Yang's visibility, and this is another boost. It's a really good cast. There are a lot of sort of Comedy Central friendly comics who pop up in episodes, and it's fun to see people pop up here.
Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks. Dan talks about television. Medical Police. Tell me quickly about that one.
Medical Police is on Netflix, premiered last week, and it is a spinoff or sequel to Children's Hospital, which aired over a variety of different outlets. In short form, this is a actual half-hour version of it. And if people know Children's Hospital, that's really what this is. It's kind of parody, but it's parody that occasionally takes itself seriously in ways that are often even funnier than the parody. And in this case, it's the plot is a global medical mystery, and it causes a couple doctors, the primary ones played by Rob Hubel and Aaron Hayes, the great Aaron Hayes, to travel the world, or at least places playing different international locations, trying to solve the mystery of the virus. And the thing I like most about it is that it has these ridiculous, funny moments playing with genre, and then it also does the genre right. So there are occasional action sequences that have very good stunt work. There are sometimes car chases that are reasonably well executed, and then it is just silly in places and you chuckle. So if you like the silly thing Children's Hospital does, probably you will like Medical Police. It it's maybe a little bit overlong. Probably didn't need 10 episodes of 30 minutes apiece, but I was definitely never bored watching
it. Okay, I was a fan of Children's Hospital, so I will definitely jump into this. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Thank you so much, Dan.
For sure. Till next time, Nick.
And we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. There's okay, Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him and read his stuff at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. The show continues. We are going to talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They announced their newest inductees, and we're going to jump into that, and we would love to hear from you. You can call us or text us at 312-981-7200. What are your thoughts on the inductees of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? We'll jump into that as the show continues.
Say that, but on take off.
Say your name.
Yeah,
he's good.
Okay, so good day. Our topic today is music.
That's right.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline studio here till 4 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Every morning on the show, every night/morning on the show, we let you program our music bumps that we listen to coming back from news and breaks. And each morning and each night, there is a theme. And on Thursdays, our theme is Triple Play Thursday.
You ever hear Triple Play Thursday?
And that is one artist, three songs. So are we got a Geddy Lee triple play here? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, Geddy Lee. Focus mainly on Geddy Lee.
Okay.
So this is coming to us from, who else? Canadian Bill.
Canadian Bill, of course.
Our man up in the Great White North.
Exactly.
The craziest Canuck of all.
Exactly. And, of course, that's Bob and Doug McKenzie, Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis. Two of the funniest characters ever conceived. And if you've not seen Strange Brew, you should, because it's genius. And Max von Sydow is in it somehow.
I find Canadian humor to be possibly the best humor.
It's up there, man. You know, you got your SCTV, you got your Kids in the Hall. Lorne Michaels, Canadian. Yeah. Guy created as SNL. So, yeah, so we got Geddy Lee coming up. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is my producer. Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. That's who's keeping you company throughout the night. It's the Nick DiGilio show here on WGN. All right, we complain about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame all the time. And I'm going to continue to complain about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So they announced the new inductees, and I'm not sure, I don't know what happened here, but Dave won the fan vote.
Dave Matthews, yeah.
Yes, Dave Matthews, yes, from the Dave Matthews Band. The Dave Matthews Band, they were up as an inductee. They won. So what is the reason why the Hall of Fame did not induct them, although they have inducted fan favorites before, like people who have won, bands and artists who have won the fan vote have been inducted previously. Was there a reason? Did they explain why they did not induct the Dave Matthews Band?
Not that I have seen as of yet.
So they didn't induct him, even though they won the popular vote. They won the fan vote. Okay. So this is the list of the inductee, of the nominees. This is the list of the nominees that were, could possibly be inducted this year. There's Pat Benatar, Dave Matthews Band, Depeche Mode, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Judas Priest, Kraftwerk, MC5, Motorhead, Nine Inch Nails, The Notorious B.I.G., Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, Todd Rundgren, Soundgarden, T-Rex, Thin Lizzy. Okay? Here's who got inducted. Depeche Mode, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Nine Inch Nails, The Notorious B.I.G., and T-Rex. Absurd. Absurd.
not all absurd.
No. I'm just saying the of the nominees, of the list of nominees, the ones that were not inducted, that should have been inducted, is absurd. So I'm not saying, you know, like I'm a huge fan of Depeche Mode. Not so much Doobie Brothers. Not sure Whitney Houston should have been inducted. I'm not a Nine Inch Nails fan, but I realize the impact that they made, and I can understand why they would be inducted. Mm-hmm. Notorious B.I.G., same thing. T-Rex, absolutely should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You got to have Mark Bolan.
You can't not. I mean, T-Rex should have been in earlier.
Yeah.
It's one of those deals where you know, you're surprised that T-Rex wasn't already in. So of the omissions, though, I mean, it's nuts. And by the way, you know, on the show yesterday morning, last night, slash, we talked with Chris and Charlie from Androgynous Mustache. They're a band that is going to be performing at Warren Zevon's birthday bash, and they're going to play all the music of Warren Zevon. And it's going to be on January 22nd at Space in Evanston. And it's always a great time, a great bunch of musicians paying tribute to one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time by playing an evening full of his music and celebrating his birthday. They do it annually. Every time we talk about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I always have to mention that Warren Zevon, who is not only not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who should be, has never been nominated. So that's one of the reasons why the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame continues to be absurd. Until you honor Warren Zevon by even nominating him, I can't abide. So we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Text us. You can call us. 312-981-7200. So of the nominees that didn't get in, how is Thin Lizzy not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? How is that possible? And they get nominated this year and they didn't get in. How do they not get in? How does that happen?
I guess they've got an anti-Thin Lizzy thing going on.
I mean, the Doobie Brothers get in before Thin Lizzy? What's happening?
Well, did Thin Lizzy write "Jesus Is Just All Right"?
No, they wrote songs better than that.
And I will say, there was when it comes to Dave Matthews, when it comes to that fan vote, this is the first time that the fan vote since being introduced in 2013, first time that who won the fan vote did not get in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I still don't understand. I still don't understand it. 773 text 312-981-7200. Your thoughts on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who should be inducted, this year's inductees, the nominees that got snubbed. 312-981-7200. 773, Nick, the Rock Hall of Fame vote has only ever counted for a fraction of 1% of the final voting.
Okay.
All right. So it still doesn't explain why Dave Matthews Band did not get in, because they won the fan vote, and every other artist who won the fan vote got inducted. I'm still, you know, completely confused by that. So 312-981-7200. Todd Rundgren. How is Todd Rundgren not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Again, nominated this year, did not get inducted. How is it? What do you have to do? He's Todd Rundgren. Not only, you know, is his work as a musician solo and with Utopia, but his work as a producer. As a producer of some of the greatest records. He produced like two XTC records that are just... Produced Skylarking, for God's sake. That alone should put him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I think Todd Rundgren is a name that kind of... I'm just going to throw this out here as the young person devil, the devil's advocate for young people.
All right.
I think Todd Rundgren is a name that doesn't really make it past about the 90s for people that, you know, grew up after his real heyday. Now, obviously, Todd Rundgren has been discovered, and once people get a sense of who Todd Rundgren is and his work, not just as an artist but as a producer, start to get a greater picture. But if you were to say to someone maybe born after his heyday, like myself, Nine Inch Nails or Todd Rundgren, like, well, I know who Nine Inch Nails are, so Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah.
I know who Trent Reznor is. So he's still a really active, you know, guy making more music. And Todd Rundgren, bless him, he's still out there playing. He's still doing his thing.
He took over, you know, when Rick Ocasek, he took over for the Cars.
Right. But he's fallen a little bit more into that legacy category, not in the front of everybody's mind.
I can understand that, I guess, but it's still, you know, his contribution to the world of music. Todd Rundgren, you know, great singer-songwriter, amazing producer, and his band Utopia. They did such great work. I don't know. I think he's kind of a giant in the history of music. I really do. And so I think he should be in. Soundgarden, eventually they're going to get in. There's no question about it. Soundgarden is going to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Not inducting them this year seems okay to me. Kraftwerk should have already been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They should already be in. And the fact that they did not get in. Now, what about Motorhead? That one
really hurts. That one really hurts that Lemmy Kilmister is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
He should be. Motorhead should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Nominated this year, don't get in. Judas Priest. One of the greatest bands in the genre of heavy metal. Judas Priest. One of the greatest bands in the genre of heavy metal. Not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. MC5 should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I can understand why people don't. Maybe don't know. You're talking about like age and stuff. Like people, you know, younger people don't know who they are. I mean, they were a revolutionary band.
Yeah, you play. I will say, if you play "Kick Out the Jams,"
yeah,
most people will be like, "Oh yeah,
yeah."
I can hear that.
But I mean, they were really influential and a revolutionary band. And just historically, what they were responsible for in the world of music, MC5 out of Detroit. If you consider that, the impact that MC5 made in the world of music, that's something that you should consider when voting, and they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, all right, let's continue. It's Nick DiGilio here, Tom Hush and I discussing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We would love to hear from you. Text or talk, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're going to continue by talking about who should induct what artists should induct these people into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So who should induct Depeche Mode, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Nine Inch Nails, the Notorious B.I.G. and T-Rex? What artists should be the ones to induct them at the ceremony for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? 312-981-7200, the Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN.
Must be the ones who start to mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart.
Yeah. Blacksmith. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN as we continue Triple Play Thursday, where you pick the music bumps every single morning. And the theme this morning is Triple Play Thursday, so that means one artist, three songs. That's the second of the Getty Lee Triple Play.
Here, man, Triple Play Thursday.
And you choose the music. Hey, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And also coming up, Valerie Genghis is going to join us. Valerie is an author and an expert in transcendental meditation. And she is a speaker and a life coach, and she's written a book called Enlightenment is Sexy. And we're going to talk all about transcendental meditation and much more. And The Gift of Near-Death Experiences is a piece that she wrote as well. So that's what's coming up. Valerie Genghis, and she is coming up. It's Nick DiGilio here. Tom Hush is producing, and we are talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The inductees, the newest inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, were announced. And they are Depeche Mode, the Doobie Brothers, Whitney Houston, Nine Inch Nails, the Notorious B.I.G., and T-Rex. The question is, who should induct these artists? Because there's always a musical artist or band that inducts these into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We do have texts, and we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, 847. How did Whitney Houston get in but not Pat Benatar? That's Suzanne in Wheeling. I mean, Pat Benatar, I love Pat Benatar, and she should have been inducted. 262, what about Ronnie James Dio? I think he should be there, if anybody. Yeah, Dio should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know if he's ever even been nominated. I don't think Ronnie James Dio's ever been nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 847, and by the way, the selection committee at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a bunch of amateur gonads. All right. As opposed to professional gonads? We all know Thin Lizzy should be at the top of the list. It's despicable. People get they get a little angry at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Let's see. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right.
This is Rich. I'm from the band Warcry, and I've been a musician for about, I don't know, what's it been now, 40 years, 35 years, something like that. And I just think that every year we deal with this situation with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I guess they have to find out what the definition of rock and roll is, first of all. I mean, I realize that we've got the blues, we've got all kinds of things that have incorporated into what makes rock and roll. But you know what? Even though it's, I mean, I love Muddy Waters, but I wouldn't put him in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, honestly.
Well, I mean, it covers a ton of different genres. It's not really like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's kind of like Music Hall of Fame at this point because they cover every genre. Because, you know, when you got...
But that's,
if you've
Nick,
got...
Nick, that's my point. That's my point. If it's going to cover different genres, then it shouldn't call it the Rock and Roll Fame.
Yeah,
they're being misleading. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just a matter of what they call it, because now at this point it's the Music Hall of Fame. They just call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because it's a known thing. It's a known quantity, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, but yeah, I mean, Whitney Houston is not a rock and roll artist. Notorious B.I.G. is not a rock and roll artist, but it fits under the category of what they have been voting on and who has been inducted. So at this point, it's kind of like the Music Hall of Fame, but just because of the familiarity, it's called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, all right. Let's see. Here is Mike on WGN. Rich, thanks for the call. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Nick. You just kind of stole what I just told your producer, Tom, before you picked up my call.
Yeah.
It should be called the Music Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, I love Whitney Houston, but she was never a rock and roller. And for her to be over Pat Benatar is crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Notorious B.I.G., what did he have? Maybe one album that mattered?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not sure about that. I think his contribution was much bigger than just one album. I think Biggie was pretty huge in the world of hip-hop for the time that he was around and for the time that he had the spotlight. So I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I'm just saying that. Don't you agree? It's no long. It hasn't been for years. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, Mike. Now it's just because we know it as the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's what it's referred to. Even though a lot of the musicians and the artists that get inducted do not actually fall under the genre of rock and roll. Mike, thanks for the call. 414 sends a text. MC5 is not Hall of Fame material. I am from that era. I saw them at the Midwest Rock Festival. I disagree. MC5 made a massive impact on music. Massive. Now, maybe if they're not your cup of tea, maybe they had a bad night. They were always a sloppy, loud, crazy band. They weren't known for their incredible musicianship. They were known for being loud. They were known for breaking rules. They were known for being impactful. And I think because of the historical significance of the band, they should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 773 text. Motorhead, not in the hall. Absurd. They are the pure essence of rock and roll. The essential oil itself. That's pretty good, man.
You got an endless tube of rocket sauce.
Also agree about Todd. He's a genius. Yeah, Todd Rundgren is he's referring to. Judas Priest, same as Motorhead. How is that possible? Getting everybody riled up.
This list does this. It really does. For the music fans out there. And I just, you know, it stinks that Whitney Houston has to bear the brunt of beating out Motorhead. Because I listen to Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
And I listen to Motorhead.
I was never a fan of Whitney Houston, but my God, the voice.
Iconic.
The talent that she had.
It was a stunningly
beautiful voice that woman could sing.
I mean, I think a lot of people out there, you remember the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah. That was 90, it was 91, right? 1991, because it was the first Gulf War.
Really important.
847 text comes in. Willie Nelson, Snoop Dogg, and Cheech and Chong should induct the Doobie Bro. Oh, see, because it's Doobie.
All right.
Because it's Doobie. I think the cast of What's Happening should induct the Doobie Brothers. Fortunately, Fred Berry rerun has passed away. Nick DiGilio on the Nick DiGilio Show for this Thursday morning. Tom Hush is my producer. You are the listener, and we want you to call in or text us at 312-981-7200 discussing the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay, who should induct Depeche Mode? Got to be somebody like in electronica?
I guess so. Depeche Mode.
I love that band, by the way.
Spectacular band. Oh, I would almost say like Trent Reznor should, but he's already
being inducted. He's already that being night. Inducted.
I don't know who to
who Depeche Mode. Who do you think? Somebody. It's got to be somebody like maybe keyboard driven.
Hmm. I don't know. I normally would say who are they inspired by? Maybe Robert Smith? Maybe.
I would think somebody more contemporary, somebody younger.
More Billie Eilish.
That's not bad.
I'll throw that out there.
That's not bad.
If we're going to do contemporary, because you listen to her new stuff, she's like one of the hottest artists on earth right now. She's doing the new Bond song.
Yep.
Kids love her.
That's a good choice. Whitney Houston, what do you think? Jennifer Hudson.
Absolutely.
Jennifer Hudson should induct Whitney Houston.
That'd be a great choice.
Yeah.
Not a nice connection to Chicago, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Not Bobby Brown.
No.
not Bobby Brown.
But what if that's his prerogative?
Oh, please. Nine Inch Nails. Who does industrial stuff now?
Well, you know who I'm going to say? I don't know. Does it have to be a musician?
I don't think so. I'm not sure if there's a rule to it, but for the most case, I would say that the majority of the people that induct the new artists are musicians. But who were you thinking?
If it wasn't going to be a musician, I would say David Fincher.
You know what?
And I think that'd be a nice way to do it. Be like Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails have transitioned so much from doing music in the traditional album format.
Yeah.
To moving on to such a new world and reigniting their own careers. And if David Fincher, who they did numerous soundtracks for, Gone Girl, The Social Network, all that, Mindhunter, I think they did some work on, Watchmen, which is not David Fincher, but they've moved into that. I think that'd be an interesting
The score
pick.
For Watchmen is ridiculously good. All right, Notorious B.I.G., who in the young hip-hop world?
Kendrick Lamar.
Kendrick?
Well,
Chance? Chance the rapper?
I think we need someone East Coast.
Oh, it's got to be somebody East Coast, yeah.
Yeah. We can't do Kendrick can't do it because he's West. As much right. as I'm sure Kendrick
No, you loves can't.
It.
No, you can't. We all know the East Coast, West Coast thing, man.
We all know what happens
when
you mess with East Coast versus West Coast.
Hey, by the way, did you watch that miniseries, The Death of Tupac and Biggie with Jimmy Simpson in it? I thought it was great. Okay, T-Rex. Who's glammy?
Who's glamorous enough to do
who's
that?
Who's glammy? Does anybody do rock and glam?
Jeez.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
It's got
We've got some texts coming in real quick because they're coming in fast and furious.
Okay.
So 773 says Jennifer Hudson for Whitney Houston.
Yeah.
Another one from 773, Dolly Parton for Whitney.
Oh, okay.
Not a bad choice.
Okay. Well, I mean, she did, cover Dolly Parton's song, which became like her signature song. It became Whitney Houston's signature song. So, yeah,
I think that's a really good idea.
I think so, too.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Let's see. Puffy. Puff Daddy for Biggie.
You know what? Absolutely, yes.
That's coming to us from the 773 as
Thank
well.
You for that. You know what? That's it. That's the answer.
Great
answer. How did we not immediately think of Puffy to induct B.I.G.?
Because 773 is a genius.
How is it not the very first artist that should pop into your head when you think, who should induct Biggie into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Of course it should be Puffy. Of course.
Remarkable.
Yeah. All right. I'm still trying to think who's glammy.
Who's glam enough? Honestly.
What about the Darkness?
Yeah, but people would be like, wait, who are they?
Who are they?
They had
you
one
remember
hit.
They had the one hit about 10 years ago?
Yeah, I Believe in a Thing Called Love. God, I used to roller skate to that.
I love that song. I thought that album was solid.
Yeah.
I liked them. They were throwback.
Well, they were a total throwback.
What's that band that everybody's like, oh, they're Zeppelin now?
Oh, Greta Van Fleet.
Yeah.
Honestly, not a bad choice.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan, but honestly.
I'm not a huge fan either.
But they could do T-Rex. They could definitely do that.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, the inductees will be inducted in a little while. You can see the special as you do every year on on HBO. All right. We continue the show with the news. DiGilio here. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio. Tom Hush is my producer. We're with you till 4 a.m. And at 4 a.m., our friends over at Bradley Place, over at the WGN TV Channel 9 Early Morning News, will join us from 4 to 5. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your morning drive right here on 720 WGN. Coming up, Rocky Johnson, the father of Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, died at 75 years old. He was a WWE legend, a wrestling legend. So we're going to talk about some of the best wrestlers of all time and wrestling in general. And also, Ben & Jerry's has released a new flavor called Netflix and Chilled. We'll talk about that. And then favorite movie snacks and favorite candy, best movie candy of all time. We have a Blackhawks Express to play back from last night's game. Another win for the Hawks. They looked great last night. And so we'll do that. And right now, we would like to welcome to the show an author, an expert in transcendental meditation. She has written a book called Enlightenment is Sexy. And it's all about transcendental meditation. She also has written a piece about the gift of near-death experiences. And we want to welcome her to the show. Her name is Valerie Genghis, and we welcome Valerie to the show. Valerie, welcome.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
Good.
Absolutely. So tell me how you got into transcendental meditation and your background.
So I grew up in Chicago, mm-hmm. lived there pretty much my whole life. And what happened was in 2011... my mom passed away. She had been fighting breast cancer for almost 14 years, so lots of ups and downs.
Yeah.
And then eventually she passed away, and it was like all the stress that I had been carrying all those years, it just hit me like a hurricane.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went down. I became suicidal. I couldn't work. I was didn't want to leave my apartment. It was a total disaster. And, of course, I went to a therapist. I actually suggested that he put me in a hospital, but he didn't. I just was seeing him multiple times a week. And then someone suggested that I learn to meditate, specifically transcendental meditation. And I had never heard about it. I knew nothing about it. I vaguely remember the Beatles going to India and learning to meditate. I mean, that was really the only thing that I had in my mind about this type of meditation. And basically in one meditation, I went from being suicidal to taking this deep dive into my soul. And when I opened my eyes, it was like a brand new world.
Wow.
I had absolutely been pulled out of like this hell that I was living in.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I know, you know, people have talked about this before. Caring for a sick parent is an unbelievably stressful thing. So where did you go to discover transcendental meditation? Someone suggested that you do it. So where did this happen, and who was it that you discovered?
Okay, so with TM, that's what they call it for short.
Okay.
You're taught by a teacher, a transcendental meditation teacher. And at the time, the Chicago teacher was in Hyde Park, like right off of Lakeshore Drive. So that's where I went to the office. And in 4 days, it's about an hour a day, an hour to 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You're taught how to meditate. But really day one, like right out of the gate, you know how to meditate. And now I think the office is at 1 East Erie.
Okay. And so what exactly is transcendental meditation? If you can kind of describe it, if it's a specific form, correct? Okay.
Yeah, it's a mantra-based meditation. So you're given a sound. It has no meaning to you. And you basically use that sound as a tool that allows you to settle down inside and quiet your mind. And it works. And it's really easy. You know, I mean, now I've come across hundreds and hundreds of people that have learned to meditate. And it's always the same conversation before they learn. There's no way I can meditate. I've tried other things. I've tried apps, and I can't meditate. I can't stop my thoughts. And A, they always find that they can meditate after they learn this. And B, there is no stopping thoughts. I mean, thoughts when you're meditating are pretty meaningless. It's just your body releasing stress. So you can have thoughts, and it's like, who cares?
Mm.
There's no rules in this. It's just you're just trying to quiet your nervous system and your mind down, but, you know, it shouldn't be like a war that you're having internally.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm one of those people, Valerie, that's like, I don't think I'd be able to meditate, because I'm one of those people who, when I try to go to sleep, it takes me at least 90 minutes. Every time I get in the bed, it takes me at least 90 minutes to fall asleep, because my brain won't stop and I keep thinking about things over and over and over and over again. And I would imagine that you would say that TM would help me in some regard with that.
I mean, absolutely. And what you just described, I think, is pretty normal. I think most people, you know, are constantly having thoughts and like going over ideas and experiences in their head. And this is just a tool to help you reel it in, you know, just slow down. And when you get that sense of peace inside of you and your nervous system is more calm and your thoughts aren't racing like they used to be, you have a new perspective on life, and things just start going smoother for you. It really, it's fascinating how it all works. When you do this type of practice and you turn inward, everything that's happening outside, like, becomes cooler.
Mm. Oh, okay. So
at least that was my experience, right out of the gate.
So when you had this sort of life-changing experience after that, when did you pursue it as something that you wanted to teach people, that you wanted to become part of? How did that happen for you with that transition? Did you know it right away that this was something you wanted to pursue and help other people?
No. First of all, I was in the bar and restaurant business. My dad's Greek,
God,
so of course we owned restaurants.
Yeah.
So, like, that's what I did my whole life. And as soon as I started feeling better, I was like, hey, I'm going to open a bar. Like, that's what I know. That's what I do. And my TM teacher was like, you know what? I think she had seen this before, this, like, massive transformation in people. And she was like, why don't you slow your roll and give it some time? I think you're going to end up going in a different direction.
Mm.
And she was right. She, at the time, was about to start working at Harpo Studios, because Oprah and her entire staff in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, she was offering TM to everybody in the company. And so they asked me to come work with them at Harpo. And, like, they're at Loyola Medical School and a bunch of different corporations in the city. And I flat out was like, no, I don't want to do that. Mm. I don't know anything about this. And through a series of fascinating events, I was led to believe, like, no, this is the right path for me. So I said yes to the job. And next thing I knew, I was, you know, talking to Oprah about her meditation practice and started talking to people before and after they learned to meditate. Mm. I did not become a TM teacher. I didn't want to take that route. I was just there to talk to people about what this experience was going to be like.
Right.
And just give them support after they learn to meditate, because people tend to have a lot of changes in their life.
Valerie Genghis is here, by the way, if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. This is Valerie Genghis. She's an expert in transcendental meditation and an author. And if you want to jump in, if you've had experience in this, or if you want to talk or text to us, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So, Valerie, you mentioned there's a series of extraordinary events that happened that led you to actually accept the thing at Harpo. What were those things?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so now, remember, I was suicidal weeks before what I'm about to tell you is happening. So I come out of this, learning this meditation practice, everything is different to me. Like, sound is different to me. Like, colors are different. Everything is different. I feel reborn. And so I started being social again, like, immediately. And my brother's friend, who I had not seen in, I don't know, 15, 20 years, he had come into town and he knew my mom had passed away. So he got a hold of me and he invited me to the Metro to go see the Foo Fighters. They were doing like a small show before doing Lollapalooza the next night.
Got it.
And he was like going to go out to dinner with them, and he invited me to dinner, but I was already going to Sade. It was like all mixed up. But I said, okay, I'll meet you there at midnight. And he said, you know, you're going to get to meet the band. And I didn't really care because I didn't listen to them, so I didn't know any of their music.
Yeah.
But I get to the show, and it's exactly how he said it would be. He slaps a wristband on me, takes me up to, like, I don't know, the second or third level at the top, and I'm looking down at the band, and I'm like, my mind is blown at how incredible they were. And I've been to Metro a million times, but it was so different. Like, all the energy was just coursing through my veins, and I was like, this is unbelievable. But I knew something had really changed because the music sounded so different to me.
Yeah.
And so, okay, the show ends. It's really late. It's like 2 or 3 in the morning. And he said, let's let all these people clear out, and then we'll go backstage with the band. They're going to get pizza or something. So we're sitting there, and I see all this, like, red, purple kind of hair coming up the staircase. And I'm thinking, like, A, whose hair is that? And B, what are they doing here at 3 in the morning? And it turned out to be Wynonna Judd. So I guess she had the same manager as the Foo Fighters. That's why this is what I'm
this
telling
is,
you.
This
like
is
things
this
got
is,
really cool
this
and
is
weird.
Crazy. This is crazy. It, what a great story. Continue, was, please.
Okay, so basically, before my mom died, for years, 2 or 3 years, she was obsessed with Wynonna Judd being on the Oprah Winfrey Show and singing this Foreigner song, I Want to Know What Love Is. And, like, this was something all of my cousins, her friends, everybody knew that she had this obsession with this performance, and I'd, like, tease her about it, and it was just, like, a sting with my mom.
Yeah.
So before my mom died, I said to her, you have to, like, stay in touch with me. My mom was my best friend. I mean, like, I absolutely adored her.
Yeah.
And I said, you have to, like, give me a sign that you're okay, and, like, please communicate with me. Like, do it through music. And I just said it, but I didn't really know what I was saying. I just was, like, desperate at that point.
Yeah.
So when Wynonna Judd showed up at the Foo Fighters show, and I had just been offered a job with Oprah Winfrey, like, my brain,
oh,
like,
man,
could not comprehend what was happening.
Wow.
And then my brother's friend knew her. So next thing you know, we're all talking, and then we're, like, shuffling down the stairs, and we're backstage with the Foo Fighters and Wynonna Judd, and I'm like, am I on acid? But I wasn't. It was just my normal life. And then basically I just was like, I can't remember exactly what I said to her, but I said something to her about my mom and the job. And then I went home that night, and I was like, I got to take that job. So the guys in the band gave us, like, we could be on the stage at Lollapalooza on the side of the stage with them the next night. And it was raining that night, and I'm on stage with the Foo Fighters, and I'm looking out at, like, thousands of people, and it's pouring rain, and the skyline is behind them. And I was like, my whole life has changed. I'm taking that job. And by, like, Friday, I was sitting there talking to Oprah.
I gotta tell you,
it was crazy.
That is, I loved that story, Valerie. Absolutely, absolutely loved it. Unbelievable. This is Valerie Genghis is with us. She is an author and an expert in transcendental meditation. ValerieGenghis.com, GANGAS. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Talk or text if you have experience with meditation. That is a really crazy and awesome story about how you got into this. And so you took the job.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't kidding when I said things got super cool really fast.
Yeah. No, that's such a great story, and so random. Wynonna Judd showing up at a Foo Fighter show. That's just,
I know. I was like, what the hell is she doing here? And her husband, I think his name is Cactus, he was there. Like, I was like, wait, what? Like, my brain could not keep up with, like, the yeah. reality of what was happening. And yeah. then since then, I've seen her, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 times. She, like, took my book up on stage and talked about it. I mean, the whole thing is totally surreal.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Valerie Genghis is with us. Transcendental meditation is what we're talking about, and much more. Now, not only did you work with Oprah and work with her, you know, doing TM and things like that, but you also, speaking of bizarre and crazy stories, you also worked with David Lynch, who is one of my favorite filmmakers on the planet. First of all, what's he like, and what was the experience of working with him like?
Well, so I worked for the David Lynch Foundation. Okay. And they were the ones that were, like, overseeing the project of working at Harpo Studios.
Okay.
So I worked with Bobby Ross, which is, like, their main guy. He teaches, you know, a lot of the celebrities to meditate, and he was there with us. And I did end up meeting David Lynch at one of his events, but it's not like I was working with him every day.
Okay, got it.
So, but he started this amazing foundation because he's super into TM, and he's been doing it for a really long time. And the foundation has just done amazing work. And I was lucky enough to, you know, work with them. But, I mean, again, I never thought about David Lynch. I didn't even know he had a foundation. I didn't know any of that. And then next thing you know, like, I'm in, and I'm in deep. Like, this is my new career. So it was kind of, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. Valerie, we're going to continue talking to you. Valerie is with us, and we would love to talk to you. We're going to continue talking to Valerie. Valerie Genghis, author, expert in transcendental meditation. We'll talk about her book and meditation. If you have any experience in that or questions about it, it's 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on a Thursday morning on WGN. It's the Nick DiGilio Show here on 720 WGN, continuing till 4 a.m. on this Thursday morning. Tom Hush is my producer. We're with you all morning long. It is a Thursday, which means it's Triple Play Thursday. We have a different theme every morning where you pick all the songs that we play coming back from breaks and news. And Triple Play Thursday means you pick one artist and three songs. We're in the middle of a Madonna Triple Play. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Valerie Genghis is with us. She is an author and an expert in transcendental meditation. And we've been talking to her about it. And if you would like to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And Valerie, let's continue to talk. So after this experience, this life-changing experience, so meditation became it became a very important thing in your life, obviously.
Yeah, because now, I mean, not only did I have that extraordinary experience, then after I started working with the David Lynch Foundation, I felt like a strong pull to help others. You know, I was making a fraction of the money I used to make being in the restaurant business, but I didn't care about any of that. It was like my life had a bigger purpose than just, you know, making money and doing the things I normally would have been doing.
Yeah.
Everything had changed. So the idea that I got to go to work every day and help people, I was like, yeah, I'm all in.
And so what for you helping people out, what are some of the stories that were that affected other people? You said you were helping people out, you loved helping people out and getting into the world of TM. What are some of the success stories that you've heard from people who you've helped out and who have discovered TM?
I feel like there's a common theme. People's relationships get better. They can think more clearly. They can absorb more information. There's a general happiness that kind of bubbles up from them after they, you know, start meditating for a little while and their nervous system calms down. And people make big changes in their lives after they learn to meditate because you have a new perspective when all of a sudden you're really calm. You become more creative. That's why there's so many, you know, singers and actors and actresses that do TM because it brings out so much creativity in you. And so I was there to be talking to all these people and watching their lives change in front of my eyes. And I thought that was extraordinary. And to this day, I still do.
And so what do you say to people? Let's say, you know, there's some people who have excuses, or not just excuses, but reasons why they don't think they can meditate. What about the issue of people? Do people say that they're too busy? They can't take the time? And what do you say to those people who have like a pretty full, busy life?
I think that when you start meditating, you actually have more time because you're so efficient. That you get more done. It's like the noise is gone in your mind. So you can really focus on whatever task you have at hand. So actually, I always tell people, like, you're gonna have more time. I know that's like an abstract thought. It's hard to, like, believe that unless you experience it.
Yeah.
But that has been my experience. And for a lot of people, I mean, there's people that are extremely busy, extremely successful, that do TM, and they swear that that's like the magic bullet for them that allows them to be even more successful and be able to handle a lot of moving parts.
It's fascinating stuff. By the way, a couple of texts have come in, Valerie, from our listeners. 815 says, "Great show, great subject. How does one set up TM in your own home? You can do it in your own home and at kind of at your leisure, right?"
Oh yeah, I've meditated, you know, in the back of cabs in New York City. I've meditated. I can meditate anywhere. It's very simple. You don't have to, you know, sit on a meditation pillow and have a chime going or incense. None of that. Mm-hmm. It's very simple, and you can do it anywhere.
I love that you said that was you. By the way, TM we're talking about is transcendental meditation. I love that the first example that you gave is that you did TM in the back of a cab in New York, which is I think a very appropriate place to try and meditate, I would imagine.
And you know what? I was like, kind of like, oh, I wonder if I can do this. And it had no effect on me at all that I was like sitting in traffic. Like all of that noise went away as soon as I started thinking my mantra. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. And so now, you know, like I live my life. I'm constantly traveling and I'm in different places. And I have found that I can meditate pretty much anywhere.
That's really something. 630 area code also texts in. "I'm so excited to hear Valerie on your show. I think I was one. She was one of my public speaking students at Butler Junior High some years ago. Her story is amazing." Does that sound familiar?
Oh my God, who is that?
They didn't leave a name. What did you say her name was?
I said, "Is it Mrs. Bruni?"
She did not leave a name, but it says 630. It just says, "I'm so excited to hear Valerie on your show. I think she was one of my public speaking students at Butler Junior High some years ago. Her story is amazing."
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Oh man.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So let's talk about your book, Enlightenment is Sexy. When did you write it and what was the inspiration for it? And tell us what the book is about and everything.
Okay, so I was working at Harpo for about 2 years, and then we ended up at Loyola Medical School and maybe like five or six other corporations in the city. And I started realizing, like, I'm pretty good with people, and I like this work. So I became a life coach, and I started working with clients. And then I wrote a blog. Let me back it up. That public speaking class at Butler Junior High, that was the only time I did any public speaking ever. And so my next public speaking gig was standing in front of Oprah one-on-one, well, with the president of her company, in a screening room. Like, all of a sudden I was a public speaker.
Oh,
like,
man.
This gift came out of me, and it was like, wow, that's a weird place to start, you know, like, that's going from like 0 to 100. So the same went for the writing. I wasn't a writer. I wrote papers in college and stuff, but I had never written anything for public consumption.
Right.
And I was asked to write a blog about dating. And the blog ended up in a best-selling book. And I thought, okay, this is a good sign. And so I started thinking, you know, I'm going to write a book. And the desire got stronger and stronger until I just made a decision to quit my job. I gave or sold everything I owned in my apartment. I got rid of like my purses and shoes and all that stuff, rented my condo, and moved to a little town in Iowa so I could just get rid of every distraction in my life and just sit down and write the book. And that's exactly what I did.
Wow. By the way, it is Mrs. Bruni.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Bruni. Thanks for texting in.
She did. She texted back into Tom and my producer, Tom Hush. And it is her. We're talking with Valerie Genghis, author and an expert in transcendental meditation. Tell us about what the book is, what the book is about and all that cool stuff.
So when I had the experience, when I learned to meditate, one of the first things I said to my teacher was, oh my God, everything I thought I knew was wrong. You know, it was like all of a sudden I was living in opposite land, and I realized that I had been raised not for any reason except that it's normal to constantly be looking outside of myself to, you know, work really hard and do well in school and, you know, just like push, push, push. And I wasn't really taught to go inward. And so everything like flipped in my life. And so I was looking at like every aspect of my life totally differently than I had been. And so I wanted to just write, you know, a guidebook. It's a guidebook for a magical life because I really felt like now I was living a magical life. Mm. So I basically took all these different topics and just put down my thoughts about how I now saw, you know, these different aspects of my life.
And yeah, and so and how did the book go over? You said Oprah had it.
Well, I had not, at that point I had quit the David Lynch Foundation and I had moved to Iowa. So I separated myself from all of that and I decided to self-publish. I didn't want to wait for a publisher, which I'm glad I did that because I learned all about how to publish a book and now I have that information. And for a self-published book, it's done really well. It's opened a lot of doors for me, so it's pretty good. It's been pretty good.
So you're,
and now I'm on my second book, so something's happening.
Seven Signs of Transformation, which is also like a free ebook, correct?
Yep.
Tell me about that.
I got really interested in how other people have had the same type of experience that I had, and that's what led me into researching near-death experiences. That's one way people, if someone has a near-death experience, I mean, I would say 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, they come back a totally different person. Mm-hmm. They also have the experience of, oh my God, everything I thought I knew was wrong, because they tap into knowledge that us as normal humans normally don't get access to, and they come back and they're transformed. So that's one of my favorite ways people transform because it's so dramatic and it's so fascinating. So when you do have these types of experiences, your whole life does change. And unless you find other people that have also had this experience, it can be very confusing because you're so different, and a lot of people won't understand what you're talking about unless they have also gone through it. So I decided to write that ebook just to have on my site, you know, if someone is going through a process, an awakening process like this, that they have a little bit of a roadmap.
And, okay, and so, but the website, by the way, is ValerieGangas.com. That's G-A-N-G-A-S, ValerieGangas.com. They can find the Seven Sides of Transformation there. Well, we're going to continue talking with Valerie. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Valerie Gangas is here, expert in transcendental meditation. And we would love to hear from you. Either talk or text at 312-981-7200. And the show continues.
Strike the pose.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and it's the Nick DiGilio show. My producer is Tom Hush. We're keeping you company till 4 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the talk and text line, and we'd like to hear from you. And by the way, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Valerie Gangas is my guest right now. She is an author and an expert in transcendental meditation. She has a free ebook available on her website called Seven Sides of Transformation. She has a book also called Enlightenment is Sexy. She's a speaker and a life coach, and here talking about transcendental meditation and how it changed her life and how it can change your life. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Valerie, let's continue talking. We have someone who's on the line who wants to ask a question. Are you there, Valerie?
Oh, yep.
Okay. All right. So we have a listener who wants to ask a question. Ken?
Oh, okay.
Ken, go ahead.
Oh, hey. Hey, Nick.
Go ahead, Ken.
Okay. Hi, Valerie. Yeah, I'm curious
Hi.
About I'm curious about the method you're using to validate your NDEs, because every time I hear somebody talk about this psychic phenomena stuff, including NDEs, they say, I believe. Well, you know what? If you believe, you're lying. You don't believe. You know. You see, I know. I've had an NDE. I know. So basically my question is, what's up with all these people going around, I believe? You know, if you believe, you didn't have an NDE. If you had an NDE, you know. So that's basically my statement that I want you to react to.
Okay. All right, Val.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. If you haven't, okay, first of all, I have not had an NDE. I just study them because I'm fascinated by them. But
and by the way, that's near-death experience is what we're talking about. Near-death
experience. Yes. And the people that I've been that I have become close to that have had these experiences, I mean, they know, like they know, like they know, and they don't care what anyone else thinks because they saw it with their own two eyes. They lived their life review. They had a connection to God and, you know, family members that have passed away and all that. And I think the proof is in the pudding when you see how their lives have changed after the experience. That's like, watching that is actually the most fascinating part to me because they come back and they're totally different humans. They have more love in their heart. They want to help people. They're transformed. They're lighter and they know things. And so that's what I tend to look at. Like, what type of person are they post near-death experience? And I have seen a lot of, you know, wonderful people come out of a near-death experience. They're on this earth and they know what their purpose is and they want to help people.
Mm-hmm. Do you seek out, by the way, Ken, thank you for the call. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So how do you encounter people who have had near-death experiences in order to talk to them and write about these experiences? Do you seek them out?
Yes. So basically what happened was when my mom died, part of the reason I was suicidal is because, I mean, I really lost it. So let's say that first, but I felt like I needed to kill myself to find my mom and like help her get to heaven. I mean, my mind had shattered. So I was having all these thoughts that like, I didn't know where my mom went and I was like scared for her and confused. So after I got better, after I started meditating, then I took a real deep dive into NDEs and I started watching tons of YouTube videos. I started interviewing people, reading books about it. And I realized that all this meditating that I'm doing, you know, going into this deep silence,
yeah,
it feels like I'm having tiny near-death experiences. Like I'm getting a glimpse into this other side, like that I normally would not experience. So that gave me an even greater connection to people that have had these experiences.
And so is there a common thread that you find among folks who've had near-death experiences?
Yeah. The common thread is a couple things. A lot of them are outside of their bodies. Let's say they're having surgery or, you know, they're in the ICU and they're watching themselves. They're watching the doctors working on them. They can come back and say, like, you were listening to this music. You had this conversation. They know everybody in the room. Like, they are watching themselves from outside of their body.
Mm.
So that's step one. And they don't feel freaked out by what's happening. It's like they recognize that, like, that's just a meat sack and it's laying on the table and that's not me.
Mm.
So it begins with that understanding. And then many of them see a white light that they walk into. Lots of people see family members that have passed away that are waiting for them. They tend to all describe it as coming home.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to come back. And a lot of them are given a choice, like, do you want to stay or do you want to go? And it's a really hard decision to make for them because they don't want to come back to this because they're finally free.
Yeah.
And lots of people, they have near-death experience. I mean, they have life reviews with their near-death experience, and so they see every aspect of their life from their birth to their death. And not only do they see it like a movie, but they're experiencing how other people in their lives felt in knowing them. Like if you help someone, you can feel like how grateful they are. It's like they get every side of the square in this life review. And then many people say that they have had direct experiences with God and that God sends them back with a new purpose in their life. And that's why they come back into their bodies.
That's fascinating stuff. Valerie Genghis is with us. She is an author and an expert in transcendental meditation and has written about near-death experiences as well. We have a listener here, Roosevelt. Go ahead, Roosevelt.
Yeah. How you guys doing today? This is a wild, wild conversation. You made me think of one person in particular in my life. I'm 63 years old. I was always into music, particularly rock and Santana, to be precise. Carlos Santana comes to mind. I remember when we were kids in the mid-70s, he went through a transformation also in music. He got very spiritual, just like what you said, Valerie, and his music completely changed. To this day, I remember us, me thinking, we used to think, I mean, he used to always, during the concerts, he used to say, well, we got to be peaceful and meditation and spiritual. And Valerie, it's funny you mentioned the fact of religion, and he used to bring up religion, peace, to fellow man and this kind of stuff, and we thought he was nuts. And a lot of these people that, such as yourself, they have this thing of giving. Is it something that refocuses you, Valerie? Is it something that you say, well, from now on, I'm going to do more, like what you were mentioning, you know, I want to do more for other people? And other people that come to mind are Eva Longoria, Gwen Stefani, and one person in particular, too, is Ellen DeGeneres. She was, as a matter of fact, on Oprah. There's a video that I seen a while back where she says that if it wasn't for transcendental meditation, she would have never came out being gay. So my question is, again, is it something that refocuses you? In other words, is it something that you no longer are a person that say, well, I'm going to be selfish and this, and it changes your whole life in general?
Yeah. Well, I think we got that clear. If you can respond to that, Valerie.
Yeah. I mean, for me in particular, I felt like I was very clear why I was on this earth. I felt like my own life didn't matter that much. It was more like I was here to help other people, and that's what I was going to do for the rest of my days. And there was no question in my mind. It just, that was it. And to have that level of clarity, I mean, I never had clarity like that before. I was always like, you know, what am I going to do? I guess I'll open a bunch of bars. And I mean, I was all over the place. And I had laser clarity after I learned to meditate. I mean, after a couple of weeks, I was like, okay, this is it. I know why I'm here. I know what my purpose is. I know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge gift to receive.
Valerie Genghis is with us. She is an author and an expert in transcendental meditation. You can check out her website at valeriegenghis.com. And you can check out her free ebook. Thanks for the call, Roosevelt. And it's called Seven Signs of Transformation. What's next for you? What are you working on now, Valerie?
I'm working on my next book. And hopefully we'll be shopping my proposal around to publishers in the next couple of months. I'm starting a course called Stress Rehab that'll be live in February. And my podcast is coming out. So there's a bunch of things happening, and all the information will always be on my website.
Okay, that's great. And as a life coach, what exactly, what's the process? What do you do as a life coach?
So I'm not a psychologist. I do have a master's degree in spiritual psychology, but I don't like see people in an office and like, you know, work on their mental health. I don't do that. It's basically people come to me They want to make some big changes in their lives. Maybe they hate their job and they want to get out, or they want to get into a relationship, or they want to move. It's pretty clear what they want to do. They just don't know how to get there.
Yeah.
So I help them, you know, through a series of tools that I have, and just working with them week after week to help them actually achieve their goals.
Okay. All right. Well, Valerie Genghis is here, and it's ValerieGenghis.com. And people can just go to your website and see all this stuff. Can they contact you via your website?
Yeah, they can. Mm-hmm.
And how many clients do you have?
Right now I have about 10, and they're all women.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why.
I was just going to say, is there a reason why you only have women clients at this time?
I think it's because the Enlightenment is Sexy, it was geared towards women.
Oh, I see.
It's every woman's guide to a magical life. So I think people read the book and then they contact me, and I just happen to have more women contacting me than men.
And how do you, so are these people from all over the country?
All over the world.
All over the world. So you help people out from all over the world. That's great. Valerie, fascinating, and I have to tell you, that story that you told about how you took the job at Oprah, I can't even explain to you how much I love that story. It was so great and crazy.
It's seriously one of my favorite stories, because really that was like the beginning of it all.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of the magic just like pouring into my life, and it continued. It just was like, how is this happening? And yeah. The only thing I had changed was like incorporating some silence into my life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is great stuff and very inspiring. Valerie, thank you so much for joining us. We had a great time.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Valerie Genghis. Check out ValerieGenghis.com, GANGAS. You can get some meditation in your life, and hope maybe it'll change your entire life. So again, ValerieGenghis.com is the website. All right. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to talk about Rocky Johnson, wrestling legend. He passed away, father of Dwayne Johnson, and we're going to talk about wrestling. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we're going to talk about great wrestlers and best wrestlers of all time, and give you this story about Rocky Johnson, the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who just passed away. And that's coming up here on 720 WGN.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth there, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie Heap, babe, and it keeps.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. The show continues live from the Skyline Studio until 4 a.m. And I'm Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is the producer, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So I happen to be a pro wrestling fan. I have been my entire life. I don't watch it as religiously as I used to. I catch it every once in a while. I don't think the product is as good as it has been in the past, but there are certainly some great wrestlers out there. I'm talking specifically about the WWE. I've been a wrestling fan my whole life. I grew up watching it ever since I was a little kid. And so I still watch it, and I still am a fan. Tom, you're a wrestling fan, right?
Yeah, I grew up watching that with my grandmother.
And so you're young. So what was the era that you grew up? Was Stone Cold?
Yeah, I got the full Attitude Era, basically.
Yeah,
and Stone Cold, Steve Austin, and The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much, Triple H was big.
Yeah,
Undertaker was really big at the time. I remember watching tapes. I think they would sell tapes of SummerSlam.
Sure.
Like, my cousin, also named Tom, was big into wrestling at the time. And I would go over to his house in Addison and watch SummerSlam on tape, because we couldn't do the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't allowed to do the pay-per-view, so we had to wait till it came out on tape.
Right.
Go watch it then. But well, it was really great.
My folks, especially my mother, are huge wrestling fans. My mom watches wrestling every week. She watches Raw on Monday. She watches SmackDown on Friday. And my mom is hilarious when it comes to wrestling, because, like, you know, I have to keep reminding her that it's like she hates all the bad guys. She gets mad.
can't, she doesn't like the heel.
Hates the heels and takes the storylines like seriously. Like she gets mad. And I'm like, Mom, it's all fake. I mean, not the athleticism and the wrestling, you know, but it's these are storylines. They're not.
They're for entertainment.
The heels are acting and the faces are acting. And so, but she hates the heels, like takes it very, very seriously. I think a lot of wrestling fans prefer heels. You know, I mean, I thought Seth Rollins' heel turn was fantastic. He's doing a great job as like the top heel in WWE right now. And then there are guys like Aleister Black and Buddy, what's the guy's name? Buddy Murphy. Who've had this rivalry. These two guys are unbelievable. Have you seen these guys?
I haven't had the chance. No.
These two guys are unbelievable in the ring. And they keep pairing them up. Like, I mean, three Raws in a row now. They've been like the centerpiece match. And these guys are, I mean, man, these guys can wrestle. They got incredible moves. But it's not just about the moves in the ring. There are a lot of things that factor into what makes a great wrestler. And I've got here a ranking from Bleacher Report about how they rank. They rank, they talk about the career, and then they rank the look, in-ring, mic skills, and marketability. So they factor in all of that. And that all comes together to what makes a great wrestler. There are some guys who can move and do great in-ring work, can't talk on the mic.
And that's which is almost worse.
It's important. It's an important skill to be able to work the mic.
Like AJ Styles. I think he's really bad on the mic.
He's terrible on the mic, but he's a terrific wrestler.
Incredibly athletic.
Yeah. But he is terrible on the mic. So it's Nick DiGiulio here, and we're talking wrestling. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. And the reason why we're doing this, Tom Hush, my producer, and me, Nick DiGiulio, we're talking about wrestling, is because Rocky Johnson, former WWE Tag Team Champion and WWE Hall of Famer, has died at the age of 75. WWE confirmed it on a Wednesday. Johnson, born Wade Douglas Bowles, married into a famed family after he wed High Chief Peter Maivia's daughter, Ada Maivia. He was the father of former multi-time WWE World Champion and current Hollywood megastar Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Here's what they say. Dwayne, or WWE, is saddened to learn that Rocky Soul Man Johnson, a WWE Hall of Famer, former tag team, a world tag team champion, and father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, has passed away at 75, the statement said. Johnson began wrestling in 1964, working his way to the point of becoming a top star in the territorial wrestling days and challenging for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship multiple times, coming up short against Jack Briscoe, Terry Funk, and Harley Race. Johnson was also held the NWA television championship on two separate occasions. Arguably the greatest in-ring accomplishment of Johnson's career, however, became when he returned to work in the then WWF in 1982. Johnson teamed with Tony Atlas as the Soul Patrol, and I totally remember that. And the duo defeated the Wild Samoans in a no disqualification match on November 15th, 1983 to win the WWF Tag Team Championship. Atlas and Johnson made history on that night by becoming the first African-American tag team to hold that prestigious title. Johnson would retire in 1991, but continue to have a massive impact on the wrestling world as he worked with fellow WWE Hall of Famer Pat Patterson to train his son inside the squared circle. This was the catalyst to the rise of one of the biggest stars in professional wrestling history, and that would be The Rock, who went on to become a massive force in Hollywood and the man to induct his father into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2008. So no cause of death was mentioned here, but he was a wrestling legend, and obviously, you know, his son went on to be, you know, an absolute legend as well. You know, at the height of The Rock's popularity, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, his popularity on wrestling, on WWE, not his popularity in Hollywood, which has surpassed anything that anyone would have thought. He has cut some of the funniest promos ever. Promos are when a wrestler takes a mic and starts talking, and they call that a promo. And this was back when Michael Cole was just, you know, like when the interviewer, he wasn't doing play by play, or he wasn't at the table at that time. And he always Michael Cole. There's one that they did. And I don't know if you could find it, but if you YouTube or Google, The Rock, talking to cops. Because what happened was that a car hit Stone Cold. You know, like these ridiculous storylines, like a car in the garage at the stadium that they were performing at, like ran over Stone Cold, and so the cops show up and start interviewing everybody, you know, to find out who may have run down Stone Cold Steve Austin, and so they find out that the car, was registered under the Rock. Under the Rock's name. And so he's Michael Cole is interviewing him to talk about, you know, the next match that they're doing. And so, of course, you know, when you're interviewing a wrestler to talk about the next match, he has to talk smack about the person that he's going to be in the ring with. So the cops come and interrupt interrupt the interview to interrogate The Rock. So this is classic.
We just have some questions to ask him.
Exactly, because there is no reason to arrest the Great One. The Rock says this: you have the nerve to come in front of The Rock and interrupt The Rock, and you two jabronis don't even have enough class to introduce yourself? What is your name?
Detective.
It doesn't matter what your name is! The Rock says this. Right now, as The Rock speaks, there are literally millions of Rock's fans, and if you all just know your role, shut your mouth. You, and especially you, in 4 seconds, they will all chant The Rock's name.
No, oh, keep it going. You got to hear the donut part. The donut part's the best part.
Now, seeing as you jabronis really want to find out who is driving The Rock's stolen car,
yes, we do, sir.
Well, The Rock has one question for you. Write this down. Do you like donuts?
Sure, we like donuts.
What's your favorite donut?
Jelly.
Oh, you like jelly? Well, jelly's a good one. The Rock says this. Write this down. When you leave here, go down to Dunkin' Donuts. Get the biggest jelly donut you can find. Write it down. Hold that jelly donut up. Squeeze all the jelly out. Squeeze all the jelly. Write it down. You like writing things down. Squeeze all the jelly out. And then write this down. You don't want to forget this. Turn that some sideways and stick it straight up your candy.
Now, the thing is, you were watching the clip, right? You got to watch Michael Cole during it, because like he is like on the verge of breaking the entire time, especially when he asks if they like donuts. It just, like, you can see the look on Cole's face. So anyway, you know, we're talking about wrestling. The Rock's father passed away, Rocky Johnson. And so we're going to jump into some of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And if you want to jump in, if you're a wrestling fan, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200.
Those other child's wild. Oh, yeah.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 4. The show continues. Tom Hush is my producer, and I'm Nick DiGilio, your host. By the way, I didn't ask who requested the Bobby Darin. Who requested the Bobby Darin?
That's coming to us from our friend Big Ed.
All right, Big Ed with a little Bobby Darin for Triple Play Thursday. Here's the deal. Every morning, every late night into the morning, we have you pick the songs that we play when we come back from break, when we come back from news. And there's a theme each morning, and on Thursday it's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! And that means it's one artist and three songs. So there you go. Rocky Johnson passed away. He's a legend, and he's the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And so we're talking about wrestling, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 7200, who are your favorite wrestlers and all of that stuff. And I do have a ranking here of the 25 greatest wrestlers of all time from Bleacher Report. We'll get into that, too, and see if we agree with these rankings. 847, text. And text us if you want. Call us if you want. Now, 312-981-7200. Hi, Nick. Kind of a crossover question here. Wrestling and TV series from earlier. Do you know if and when another season of GLOW is coming? Yes, GLOW is. That'd be season three, right?
No, season four.
Season four.
Fourth and final, though.
Fourth and final season. That's a terrific show.
Yeah. So it's going to be released a little bit later this year, summer of 2020.
So in the summer, you'll see the final, fourth and final season of GLOW. That show's great. Mark Maron is awesome on that show.
I mean, Mark Maron, Alison Brie,
yeah.
Betty Gilpin.
Betty Gilpin is great. Everybody's great.
Yeah, I at first did not like Betty Gilpin at all. I was just like, oh, God, what is she doing on the show? And she's just done an amazing job.
She's great. She's great. 309 says, hey, Nick, do you remember the Peter Falk wrestling movie All the Marbles? Yeah, that was he was the manager of a female tag team in that movie. And if I'm not mistaken, Robert Aldridge directed it. Came out in the early 80s. And of course I saw it, but, yeah, I remember thinking it was pretty good. You know, Peter Falk rules.
Yeah. I did not realize that was a glass eye, Peter Falk.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Not until I listened to a commentary for Woman Under the Influence.
Okay.
And I just had no idea.
Who does the commentary?
It's him and, John Cassavetes, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's old.
Well, yeah, it's got to be. John Cassavetes has been dead for a long time.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, I just was like, man, that guy's got a really weird eye.
Yeah,
it's a glass eye.
Yes, it is.
Shows how much I know about glass eyes.
So, professional wrestlers, greatest ones. What makes a great professional wrestler? What distinguishes the Hulk Hogans from the great Khalis? is it clear that wrestling talent is not enough to cement your legacy, or Shelton Benjamin would be one of the top WWE superstars? To be a successful professional wrestler, you have to possess the complete package of necessary talents to have a career that people will talk about years later. So there are five subcategories that they use to rank these wrestlers. And again, we would love to hear from you. You're a wrestling fan. You want to talk wrestling. Who are some of your favorite wrestlers and maybe some of your favorite matches? Talk or text with us right now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. It is career. What a wrestler accomplishes in their career is always the first point of reference, and although professional wrestling is a work, championship accolades and main event matches need to be taken into account. And then the look. A pro wrestler needs to look impressive and to look the part. Otherwise, the audience will not believe in the role that they're playing. Then you judge their in-ring ability. The ability to work a five-star match should never be underestimated, as it often has been by Vince McMahon and the WWE. Two examples in 2011, a wrestler being pushed based on look rather than wrestling ability are Ezekiel Jackson and Mason Ryan. You got to have mic skills. Charisma is vitally important in the wrestling business, and if you cannot add something to your feuds and storylines with words, then the chances are you will not be elevated to superstardom. And then marketability. A top star needs to be able to draw the crowds and sell the tickets. It is very difficult to market someone without a good look or charisma to burn, so that's why these three are all linked. Yeah, that's what it is. So you gotta consider the wrestler's career, the look, the in-ring ability, the mic skills, and the marketability. And they put 25 on this list. And coming in at number 25 is the Ultimate Warrior. The Ultimate Warrior was given the ball to run with as Vince McMahon's big superstar after Hulk Hogan. He won the WWF title off of Hogan in the main event at WrestleMania 6 and was the face of the company after Hulkamania had died down. For his look, he gets an 8 out of 10. His impressive bodybuilder physique combined with the face paint and the manic look in his eye were the main reasons that he became such a star. In-ring ability, 9 out of 10. The Ultimate Warrior was famously short of wrestling talent and had limited moves consistently mainly of clotheslines. He was able to make 8 out of 10. He gets a 2 out of 10 in the in-ring ability. 9 out of 10 for his look. He gets a 2 out of 10. And his mic skills, 5 out of 10. The Warrior tended to ramble and was often incoherent, but it was the bizarre content of his promos that made him so difficult to listen to. And marketability, 10 out of 10. The Ultimate Warrior had a huge fan base and was incredibly considering his lack of wrestling talent. He could draw tickets, and he was a huge attraction to the company needed to replace Hulk Hogan. So there it is. We got some people who are calling in here, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Tyrone is on WGN. Hi, Tyrone.
Hi, Nick. Well, you know, Nick, I don't call you very much, but I was wondering, when is Nick DiGiulio ever going to talk about wrestling again? Because he's always talking about the movies and rock music at the amphitheater. And when is he going to talk about wrestling again?
Well, that question has been answered, Tyrone.
Good, because first of all, the best match that I ever saw, and I've been to a lot of matches, but the best one I ever seen, it was the Vachon brothers against Larry Henning and Lars Anderson. Mm-hmm. That was they had to carry Lars Anderson out on a stretcher after that one. And you know, Dwayne Johnson being called The Rock. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, but wasn't Don Morocco always known as The Rock?
Before
Dwayne Johnson.
I don't remember. I just know him as Morocco. Well, yeah, I don't know if he was. I don't recall whether he was The Rock or not.
I think he was the original Rock, and then I went over to Dwayne Johnson, and you know, Don Morocco was clearly a wrestler. You know, he could wrestle.
Yeah,
and that's what makes a great wrestler to me, as a professional wrestler that wrestles. You know, these matches back in the old days, they used to go like up to an hour.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see that now. You wouldn't even begin to see that today.
Yeah. Well, they sometimes have the Iron Man matches. They sometimes have the 60-minute match. So, Tyrone, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. And we're going to continue talking here, and we want to hear about you, what you think. Rocky Johnson, The Rock's father, passed away, so we're talking about professional wrestling and ranking some of the best wrestlers of all time. So what are your favorite matches and your favorite wrestlers? 312-981-7200. We'll continue talking about wrestling as we continue through the morning.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath long about a Saturday night. Yeah! Rubbed up, just relaxing in the tub.
It's Nick DiGiulio here, keeping you company through the morning here till 4 a.m. on the Nick DiGiulio Show. Tom Hush is my producer. Vic Vaughn covers the news for us throughout the morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We continue with our Triple Play Thursday. That's where you pick the songs that we play every morning. And our theme today is one artist, three songs for Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that was our third song from the Bobby Darin Triple Play. Rocky Johnson, the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, has passed away. He was a legendary wrestler and had great accomplishments. So we're talking wrestling. And I've got here from some rankings of the greatest wrestlers of all time, the 25 greatest wrestlers of all time. So we're going to go through that and talk about that. And we want to hear from you if you're a wrestling fan. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. You can join us. Tell us your favorite match or your favorite wrestler. 312-981-7200. We got some texts here. 219 says, whatever happened to Don Eagle? Do not know. Do not know what happened to Don Eagle. 310 says, Andre the Giant and Randy Macho Man Savage. Yeah, well, we know what time period the texter from the 310 area code likes. Those guys were superstars of that time period. 219 area code says, whatever happened to The Undertaker? Undertaker's still around. I mean, the guy's like, you know, he's got to be in his 50s at this point. You know, like late, I would imagine like late 50s, he's got to be at this point. So, you know, he can't keep wrestling up until that part. I never liked The Undertaker, ever. I've never, ever liked The Undertaker. He's not a good wrestler. He's got like 5 moves. It takes him 25 minutes to get to the damn ring. His entrances are so ridiculous. You know, the whole dead man Undertaker persona, never really liked it. And then when he was American Badass and he'd come in on a motorcycle with the bandana on, that whole time period. I've never been a fan of the Undertaker. I've often just been kind of baffled by the massive success of the Undertaker. I just don't get it. And I know I'm in the minority, Tom. I'm assuming you like The Undertaker.
I mean, I like him more than you do.
Yeah, well, everybody likes him more than I do.
I thought he was good. And he was just part of that, he was part of that corral, you know, of big stars, yeah, during the Attitude Era.
No, I mean, he was massively, I mean, he's still incredibly popular. The pop that he gets, if he comes back to an old, you know, like they bring him out, they dust him off and bring him out for a pay-per-view or a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
He gets a massive pop.
But give me Stone Cold Steve Austin literally any day of the week.
No, he's great. Stone Cold is great. Let's see. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Nick. How you doing this morning?
All right. What's up?
Well, you see, I like the male soap opera of the WWE. You know, they make me laugh.
Yeah.
You know, the best matches I think right now are any of the ladders, TLC matches and stuff, you know, Money in the Bank, because those guys are just nuts now.
Yeah.
Jumping, breaking ladders. And the guys that make me laugh, I started with The Rock, or started way before The Rock, but The Rock made me laugh. Guys today that can do that is, you watch that R-Truth guy. He has no talent in the ring at all, but, man, anytime you see him out there, he's doing something stupid, and it's just fun to watch.
No, he's funny, man. R-Truth is funny. I've always been a fan. Always been a fan. And now that they've got that 24-hour, you know, title that you have to defend 24/7, it's hilarious. Every time they do it, it's funny.
Some people think that, you know, it takes away from wrestling, but, you know, I normally, because I DVR everything, I normally skip through some of the matches just to go to some of the promos because I love the storylines. They're hilarious.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And that's the best way to watch wrestling, by the way, is the DVR, because 3 hours, with Raw for 3 hours, it's like, oh, God, you know, especially if you're in the middle of a really terrible match.
Yeah.
But these matches lately, and I know, Jeff, that you watch, if you watch these matches with Aleister Black and
I've watched all three of them.
They're unbelievable. Okay. Those matches are really tremendous. Some of the best wrestling I've seen in WWE in a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see one of them in one of them ladder matches. Those guys are going to be even more crazy.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, Jeff. Thanks, man.
Hey, have a good morning.
Okay. Yeah, these guys are great, man. These two guys are two of the best wrestlers in the WWE right now, and they keep showcasing them, and they should. So the next pay-per-view is actually my favorite of the year. You know, my parents subscribed to the WWE.com.
Oh, yeah, the WWE Network?
Yeah, the WWE Network. Yeah, so they subscribe to that. So they get all the pay-per-views. And my favorite pay-per-view is coming up next Sunday, a week from Sunday.
Royal Rumble, right?
I love the Royal Rumble. I love it. It's my favorite of all the pay-per-views. One of the reasons I love it so much is because they'll trot out some dudes that haven't been around in a while. And then every single time the countdown happens, like when the audience is counting down, waiting for the next wrestler who's going to come in, I love the countdown. And then it's always like who's going to be coming up next, because Brock Lesnar, who I think is, I can't stand Brock Lesnar. He's lucky he's got Heyman, because Paul Heyman is, you know, obviously a genius behind the scenes of WWE and extreme wrestling and. You know, and he's unbelievable on the mic. Heyman is unbelievable on the mic. And that's why, because Brock Lesnar can't speak. So they give him Paul Heyman. And every promo that Paul Heyman cuts is fantastic. So, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we would love to hear from you. We're talking pro wrestling. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talking texters. John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
I grew up in the same neighborhood as you did, basically.
Uh-huh.
A little bit older than you, but I grew up watching Bob Luce wrestling.
Sure.
And on weekends, we used to be able to go down by Ben's Auto Sales. And a lot of the times, you'd see the wrestlers out there shooting commercials. You know, Moose Cholak, Baron Von Raschke, Dick the Bruiser. We saw them all out there.
Yeah.
Sort of a rite of passage to go over there some weekends, get autographs, and hang out with them.
Yeah. You don't know Bob Luce wrestling. You're too young, right? Tom is too young to know what Bob Luce Wrestling is. Bob Luce Wrestling was classic. It was sponsored by Ben's Auto Sales, which is like a local used car lot. Bob Luce was the promoter and the host. And I watched it every Sunday. It was on Sunday mornings, and I watched it every week. It was great. So they got the rankings here of wrestlers. And by the way, John, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And they rank in Ricky Steamboat here. He gets a 7 out of 10 for his career. He was always a player, more of a player with the NWA, where he had several main event matches with the likes of Ric Flair that will stand up the test of time. Yeah, that the feud, the rivalry between Flair and Ricky Steamboat, it was legendary. I mean, they had some unbelievable matches. He gets 7 out of 10 for his look. 6 out of 10 for his look. 9 out of 10 for his in-ring skills, because Ricky Steamboat was amazing in the ring. 6 out of 10 on his mic skills. He was kind of one-dimensional on the mic. 7 out of 10 on his marketability. Texts here coming in. 312-981-7200. 815 says, back in the 60s, I used to watch a wrestler named Man Mountain Mike. Man Mountain Mike. He wore bib overalls and was as big as a barn. Is he in the Hall of Fame? I can't tell you whether or not he's in any kind of Hall of Fame. Man Mountain Mike. I don't remember Man Mountain Mike.
It appears that he is not. I don't believe he is in the Hall of Fame, but... My God, is he a mountain of a man?
Well, that's probably where he got that name from.
Jeez, man. He's massive.
847 says Ric Flair. That's not going to be the first time that we hear the name Ric Flair as we discuss great wrestlers, for sure. 773 says, did you like the Undertaker's original manager, Paul Bearer? He was my favorite part. I thought Paul Bearer was hilarious. He'd come out with the urn. And he'd have the white makeup on and that stupid mustache and the big, big fat face with that dumb look in his face. I loved Paul Bearer. I thought Paul Bearer was the best part of The Undertaker. 630 says, Sting is my favorite wrestler. And I love the Crow character. That was what got me watching professional wrestling. Sting has been around forever, that guy. 262 area code says, Nick, I grew up in the days of Crusher Bobby the Brain, and I just saw a documentary on Bruiser Brody, who was murdered in the locker room by another wrestler, and also the Von Erich family, who one of the brothers is still alive, and they all died tragic deaths. That was the documentary TV series that they did on I can't remember what it's called. I watched every episode of it, but they covered all the tragic stories behind wrestling, and there have been many. It's a crazy business, and lots of the people who get into the business of wrestling die at a young age. Speaking of which, Eddie Guerrero is next on this ranking. He comes in at number 22 out of 25. That's way too low. Eddie Guerrero was great. Eddie Guerrero is one of my favorite wrestlers. 7 out of 10 for career. Eddie Guerrero was a fixture in the WCWC cruiserweight division and eventually became a star in the main event scene on SmackDown. However, despite his one reign as WWE champion, he was never able to compete with the top stars on Raw. You familiar with Eddie Guerrero?
Yeah, totally.
He was one of the best.
Great wrestler.
7 out of 10 for his look. Eddie had the look of an athlete with a cheeky grin and natural ability to make people happy, contributed to his popularity. His in-ring skills get an 8 out of 10 on the rankings here. Guerrero was first and foremost a wrestler, and he came from a famous wrestling family that had produced countless superstars. The fact that he learned his craft at the knee of Mexico's greats made it inevitable that he would turn into a great worker that could have a good match with almost anyone. One of my favorite in-ring performers of all time. Mic skills, 8 out of 10. He was great on the mic. Eddie Guerrero exuded charisma, and his numerous comedy skits never failed to make people laugh, but it was his work as a heel that his mic skills started to become more of a strength. And then marketability, an 8 out of 10. Guerrero was talented, popular, and charismatic. The fans loved to cheer for him, and he played an integral part in the success of SmackDown. And he was an attraction throughout his WWE career. And of course, he passed away too young, as we will hear a few times as we discuss wrestling. Rocky Johnson, The Rock's father, passed away. So we're talking wrestling, and we would love to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200 right here on 720 WGN.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? We could float among the stars together.
Wow. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we continue, and we are live in the Skyline studio. Tom Hush is my producer, and Triple Play Thursday, we have different themes every morning because you pick the music that we play coming back from commercials and news. Who picked the Fifth Dimension?
That's coming to us from Marissa.
Marissa?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fifth Dimension, man.
Okay. Good. Triple Play of the Fifth Dimension, everybody. Get out your lewds.
Donnie, get the lewds.
Get the lewds. All right. We're talking about wrestling, professional wrestling, that is. Rocky Johnson, Dwayne The Rock Johnson's father, passed away. He was a WWE superstar. And so that got us thinking about wrestling and some of the best wrestlers and some of the best matches. And if you're a wrestling fan, we'd love to chat. I've been a wrestling fan my whole life, so we're having some fun talking about that. And I got an article here where they rank some of the greatest wrestlers of all time. 312-981-7200. 864 texts in. Hi, Nick. I'm a huge, huge wrestling fan, and I have a lot of wrestling VHS and DVD, and I got a ton of toy wrestling men and toy rings out of the storage shed that I had as a kid. Canadian Bill says, remember George the Animal Steel? Of course I remember George the Animal Steel. Had the green tongue. He would eat the turnbuckle. The whole subplot between Elizabeth and Randy Savage and George the Animal Steel, legendary. George the Animal Steel, one of my dad's favorites. He's one of my dad's favorite wrestlers of all time, George the Animal Steel. You know what else my dad loves?
Who?
You remember the Bushwhackers?
No.
You don't know the Bushwhackers?
The Bushwhackers.
Yeah, the Bushwhackers. They were this insane tag team from, I want to say Australia. Google the Bushwhackers. Just Google Bushwhackers Wrestling.
I'm afraid it's going to pop up.
Well, what do you see what these guys look like? Their entrance to the ring was always hilarious. That's probably my dad's favorite tag team of all time.
Also, can I throw in a quick correction? It was from Michelle, the Fifth Dimension.
Michelle.
Not Marissa. Pardon
okay.
me. Michelle.
Michelle. Okay.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay. But yeah, the Bushwhackers. See, do you see what they look like? You got to go back and look.
Oh, jeez. What the hell?
These guys were awesome, man. And their entrance is fantastic. Yes. Every time they would enter, their entrances were always hilarious.
What is with these hats? That guy's missing all of his front teeth.
Yeah. He's a Bushwhacker.
Bushwhacker, I just met her.
Yeah. So you remember George the Animal Steel? What did he do before wrestling? Of course, he was a high school teacher. What makes it even better, AEW competition is always good. What makes WWE better, AEW competition is always good. Yeah, AEW is good. That's sort of the new federation that's led basically by Chris Jericho. And then you got NXT, which is kind of the junior circuit of WWE, and they have their own show competing with AOW on Wednesday nights, and they're good. They're real good. Jake the Snake Roberts. Jake the Snake Roberts. They give him 6 out of 10 for his career. They give him 7 out of 10 for his look, 8 out of 10 for his in-ring skills, and 10 out of 10 on the mic. Marketability, 7 out of 10. Jake the Snake Roberts.
Give him the DDT.
Yeah. And he went through some terrible stuff in his life too, addictions, and he's recovered.
Yeah,
thanks a lot. Thanks a lot to DDP, Diamond Dallas Page. He does, you know DDP does yoga, right? He's got a DDP yoga business.
Yeah,
but he also like counsels people, and he really helped Jake the Snake Roberts get through that really terrible time. And I still can't remember now. I'm going to go nuts trying to remember the name of that TV series, the cable show that was on just recently last year. It was on, I think it was on last year, that dealt with all the tragedies of, it was a documentary that dealt with all the tragedies that was in pro wrestling.
Dark Side of the Ring.
That's it, Dark Side of the Ring. What network was it on? Was it on Spike? Or was it on, I can't remember what network it was on, but it was really good. They did a really, really, really good job.
Let's see.
You know what? I think it was Sci-Fi. Was it Sci-Fi? But anyway, it was really good. If you want to, you know, catch up with that one.
No, it was actually produced by Vice.
That's what it is. Vice. Yeah, Vice. That's what it was. It was on Vice. So here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how y'all doing?
All right, what's up?
Nothing. I just had to chime in because I'm a big wrestling fan myself.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you some two good stories that I experienced with wrestling. Is one of them was my first wrestling event I went to in 1996. It was in Columbia, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And Ric Flair and Sting fought for the heavyweight championship. And I remember during the middle of the match when he did that sunset flip,
yeah,
Sting pulled Ric Flair's drawers down and everybody in the audience was laughing. And also I went to see WrestleMania in 2002 to see Hulk Hogan and The Rock fought.
Oh yeah, that was the big main event. Hulk Hogan and The Rock, 2002.
Oh, yeah.
WrestleMania.
Same country account of that screwed Bret Hart.
Yeah, well,
Bret,
man.
Screwed Bret.
Yep. So, all right, Chris, thanks. Yeah, the screw job on Bret Michaels. On Bret Hart. You know, Shawn Michaels still maintains he didn't have anything to do with it. He didn't know what was going on.
I don't believe him.
I don't either. That's really, if it's, you have to, if you've never seen that match, the reaction of the screw job at the end is unbelievable. Bret Hart spitting on Vince. Then he punched him in the face. Like, afterwards, he went back to his office and knocked him out. Bret Hart, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. The best there is, the best there was, the best there ever will be. Bret Hart. Coming from a pretty impressive family, too.
True that.
How about Mr. Perfect? Gotta love Mr. Perfect. 6 out of 10 for the career, 8 out of 10 for the look. Kurt Hennig, by the way. In-ring, 10 out of 10. Bret Hart described him as the greatest opponent he had ever had. 8 out of 10 for Mike's skills, 6 out of 10 for marketability. Mr. Perfect. So, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're talking wrestling, having some fun here. I know there's a lot of wrestling fans out there, and we want to hear from you via talk or text. Rocky Johnson, the wrestling legend and father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, passed away at the age of 75. And so we're chatting about wrestling, having some fun here and going through this rankings of some of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. Ranked at number 19 is Mick Foley. I think that's a little low. Mick Foley's a legend, man. I've met him several times. I've interviewed him a bunch of times. He's an unbelievably nice guy. And, of course, known for The Undertaker throwing him off the top of the cage and going through that table.
Mm-hmm.
Tooth in his nose.
Oh, God.
I mean, that match is ridiculous. He doesn't even remember half of it.
Of course.
He blacked out. He doesn't remember, you know, he doesn't remember pouring the tacks all over the all over the ring and then getting slammed into the tacks. And they were all stuck in his back.
Oh, God.
He's a maniac. Mick Foley was a maniac.
Mick Foley was just, he was a different breed.
He was, but
a different breed of man.
Incredibly nice guy.
Doesn't he also, he was Santa.
Yeah.
He loves, oh, my God, I forgot.
He loves Santa. He's written three or four children's books. His books about him, his books about, like, Foley is good. He did three books about the wrestling business. Awesome. Awesome. I love Mick Foley.
And he was just in that movie, The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Yeah.
I love Mick Foley.
He's the best.
What a guy.
Mankind, awesome. Dude Love, awesome.
Dude Love.
Yeah. 7 out of 10 for his career. It's got to be higher than that. 8 out of 10 for his look. depending on which look you're talking about. 7 out of 10 on the in-ring. 9 out of 10 on the mic skills. That's a 10 out of 10. Mick Foley on the mic is great. 8 out of 10 on marketability as the ranking continues. Dion says, Jake the Snake Roberts and Macho Man Randy Savage were my favorites. 815 texts in, and you can text in too. We're talking wrestling. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We were once catering for a biker party with hundreds of bikers, and Bam Bam Bigelow was completely drunk and arguing with the pumpkins that were on the stairwell. It was hilarious. Bam Bam Bigelow. Mark in Lake Bluff says, if you have a chance, look up DDP's daughter. She's drop-dead gorgeous. Well, I didn't know that. Was not aware of DDP's daughter being gorgeous. Let's see. Ted DiBiase is next here ranked. That'd be the Million Dollar Man. He was a top heel in the WWF in the late 80s. Do you know Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man?
The Million Dollar Ted DiBiase. I bet if I saw him.
If you saw him, you'd know. 7 out of 10 for his career. 8 out of 10 for his look. His in-ring skills, 8 out of 10. His mic skills, 8 out of 10. Marketability, 8 out of 10. So just 8 out of 10 all the way across.
Solid wrestler.
Yeah.
I love him flashing the wad, flashing the cash.
He would throw money all over the place come in and dollar signs on his lapels and stuff. I love wrestling. So ridiculous. So, all right, the show continues. We're talking about wrestling. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. The show continues with the news.
Can you serve it?
Your lewds. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, continuing live here in the Skyline studio until 4 a.m., and then we'll go over to Bradley Place to the TV side of WGN, and you can listen to the broadcast of the early morning news over at Channel 9. That's at 4, and then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt with your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, 312-981-7200. Triple Play Thursday is the theme. Every morning, you pick the songs that we play coming back from break and news. And the theme this morning is Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking wrestling. I love that. Every once in a while we bust out the pro wrestling topic, and we get a lot of people who listen to the show who are pro wrestling fans. And so if you want to jump in, and I've got this ranking of some of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and we'll continue talking about that. And the reason why we're talking about it is because, unfortunately, Rocky Johnson, wrestling legend and father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, has passed away. And so we remembered him and his great career, and then, of course, his son, who became a legend in the world of wrestling, is now one of the biggest movie stars in the world, came from the world of wrestling. So we're talking about our favorite wrestlers, our favorite matches. Text lines, talk lines are open. Let's hear from the wrestling fans. 312-981-7200. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right. What's up?
DiBiase was a jerk.
Oh, he was.
Stone cold jerk, yeah. Stone cold jerk.
Yeah.
He'd have everybody would have to pay him to take a photograph or an autograph.
Oh, man.
But the reason I called, I told Tom, is after the match at the Rosemont, there was a bar across the street where all the wrestlers would go.
Yeah.
You know, have a couple cocktails.
Yeah, I know, I know exactly the bar you're talking about. I know exactly.
Okay, all right. So we were there, and they were walking in, you know, maybe 45 minutes after the show, and Greg the Hammer Valentine walked in with Lillian Garcia, was the ring announcer.
Yeah, sure.
So my wife is sitting to the left of me. They're standing to the right of me, and we start talking, and she starts flirting, and me and the Hammer start talking about stuff. And I hear my wife giggling, and I wasn't paying attention. And Valentine says, hey, you know that girl next to you? I'm like, yeah. I said, it's my wife. He goes, you might want to pay attention. I turn around. The damn bushwhackers are buying her shots and drinks. I was like, boys, that's enough. They're like, it's okay, mate. She's okay. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's my wife.
That's hilarious. The bushwhackers were buying
both
drinks.
Of them. those Shrackers, I swear.
Oh, man, that's so funny. That's
one of the best things I've ever seen in wrestling.
Oh, God, that's a great story. Chris, thanks.
All right, man.
Oh, that's so funny. Turn around and the Bushwhackers are hitting on your wife. I'm just picturing the Bushwhackers trying to hit on this woman and buying her shots and stuff in this real cheesy bar. By the way, this bar that was at, I don't know if it's still there, right around by the Rosemont Horizon, and that was where everybody went after the shows. They would all go to this bar. Lots of people would go after concerts. It was the place, one of those bars. Yeah. And it was a pretty cheesy place. So you're in some cheesy bar in Rosemont, and the Bushwhackers are buying your wife drinks.
Oh, man. And you can't fight them.
You can't. They're the Bushwhackers.
They're gonna bushwhack you.
Legendary tag team. And they look like maniacs, these guys. And their entrances, like I said before, there's an endless amount of wrestling available on YouTube and on the internet. And I highly recommend going back and watching some Bushwhacker material. Tom, I highly recommend you do that, because I know you didn't know him till this morning. But you got to watch. What's the matter with you? You all right?
Bushwhacker material.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man.
Okay.
You got to go back. You got to go watch the Bushwhackers.
I will jump into some Bushwhacker.
Yeah, you need to, man. Yeah. Especially because they were great. They were fun to watch. They were hilarious. They were great in the ring. And like I said, their entrances were always hysterical.
All right.
So
I trust you. I trust you that I can go look up some Bushwhacker material.
Bushwhacker material. And it's my and again, I want to emphasize my dad's favorite tag team of all time. So
your dad was big into Bushwhackers?
He loved the Bushwhackers and George the Animal Steel. Those were his favorite of all time.
Did he ever get into the Attitude Era, like the Stone Cold?
Yeah, no. I mean, like I said, my parents watch wrestling, and they have watched wrestling, you know, for years. I was actually like right before the Attitude Era really took over. I was a WCW guy. I watched Nitro.
Ooh,
I used to watch Nitro on a regular basis. So, hey, it's Nick DiGilio again here, and we are here continuing the show. We want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 as we continue. My producer Tom Hush and myself here keeping you company, talking about wrestling. All right, how about Dusty Rhodes? Gotta love Dusty Rhodes, man. For his career, they give him an 8 out of 10. For his look, they give him a 7 out of 10. In ring, they give him a 7 out of 10. Mic skills, they give him a 9 out of 10. And marketability, 8 out of 10. He's an American dream, man. He's Dusty Rhodes. He's the American dream. You know, Cody Rhodes is in AOW.
You mean AEW?
AEW, yeah, AEW. Cody Rhodes is in AEW. Ranking at 16 here is Andre the Giant. 8 out of 10 for his career. He was a megastar. He enjoyed a long, successful career with the WWF. However, he was only given the title for a matter of minutes and always played second best to Hogan, which is absolutely true. His look, 10 out of 10. He weighed 540 pounds. He was 7'4". 7'4", 540 pounds. He's literally a giant. In-ring skills, six out of 10. Well, the thing is, the big guys never really impress me. You know? I mean, Andre the Giant, obviously a monster in terms of size, couldn't really move much in the ring, didn't have a lot of moves or skills because it didn't matter because of his size. Didn't really matter. 5 out of 10 on the mic skills. Andre always preferred to do his talking in the ring, and his intimidating presence meant that he got over despite the fact that his foreign accent sometimes made him hard to understand. Marketability, 10 out of 10. Billed as the eighth wonder of the world, Andre was a special attraction that fans were always willing to pay to see. His main event with Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3 was a key reason why that pay-per-view broke the indoor attendance record of any sporting event. That was when Hulk picked him up. And, of course, he's in Princess Bride. Andre the Giant's in Princess Bride, man. Doesn't he have a line where he says, "Let's how about a peanut or something?" What's it?
Well, because he always has to rhyme,
right?
Anybody want a peanut?
Yeah.
He's funny. He's, God, I miss Andre.
Yeah, Andre the Giant. Okay, phone lines are open here. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. Tom Hush producing. We're here until 4, and we're chatting about wrestling in honor of the memory of Rocky Johnson, The Rock's dad. 312-981-7200. Get your lewds. Nick DiGilio here, continuing our show here. It's 312-981-7200, Triple Play Thursday, continuing here. Every morning on the show, every night slash morning, you pick the songs that we listen to coming back from break. On Friday, though, we do have Fly Jams Friday and all of our regular Friday features. That's coming up tomorrow. And so that was the Fifth Dimension. And we're talking about wrestling, and we want to get you in here. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 and also the text line. Rocky Johnson, the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, has passed away, and so we're talking about wrestling. And next here, ranking at number 15, John Cena. Career gets an 8 out of 10. He's a 10-time WWE champion, whether you like him or not. He is the name and face of the company. He has headlined countless WrestleManias, has been involved in many high-profile feuds, and currently also with The Rock. His look, 8 out of 10. His in-ring ability, 6 out of 10. Mic skills, 9 out of 10. Yeah, he's I got to say, he's great on the mic.
He's awesome on the mic.
Yeah. And his marketability, 9 out of 10. And he plays a firefighter in the new movie.
You know, that he has personally fulfilled more Make-A-Wish wishes than any other person alive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Now, you know, he's a good guy. There's no question about it. And I, you know, some people hate him. I don't hate John Cena. I know a lot of wrestling fans who can't stand him. I don't hate him. He's not one of my favorites. You know, if I were to choose, you know, some of my favorite wrestlers, John Cena would not be one of them. I think he's very funny in movies, and I think he, as Tom said, he's a charitable guy, a big time charitable guy. But one of my favorite things ever was when John Cena first started. He came out, and he was like thug when he first came out. That was like his persona. And so I don't remember who he was wrestling, but before the match, they did the tail of the tape thing. So they put up the stats, like whoever he was wrestling, I don't know, he's 6'5", he weighs 310 pounds, he's been WWE champ 10 times, he held the tag team title, you know what I mean? So they list the accomplishments. And so when they did the tail of the tape, this was, like I said, this was when Cena first, when Cena first showed up at WWE. And they wrote, because he didn't have any belts or anything, he didn't really have much of a history. So they put his stats up. He's like 6'4", he weighs 280 pounds, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And in his accomplishments, it says, I totally remember this because I laughed my ass off. It says, he has a PhD in thugonomics. Because he had no other credentials. He hadn't won any belts or anything yet, but he had a PhD in thugonomics.
I mean, literally, what else do you need?
Oh, it's so funny.
I wish I could be walking around the streets of Chicago being like, yeah, I don't got much, but I got a degree in thugonomics.
A PhD.
A PhD in Dr. Thugonomics.
It's just so hilarious. So they just make up some, you know, the WWE writers just went, just say he's got a PhD in thugonomics.
I hope someone got a bonus for that one.
Oh, that
seriously.
I busted out laughing when I saw that. Because, you know, the guy he was wrestling or whoever the hell he was wrestling had, a lot of accomplishments and a regular-looking tail of the tape. You know, that makes sense. And then he's got a PhD in thugonomics.
I would really love that chiseled on my grave. Hopefully I can also study the science of thugonomics.
Yeah, that's when he came out and he had, like, the backwards ball cap. You know,
was he doing the "You Can't See Me" stuff?
No,
right
that
away?
Was pre. That was pre. That was pre. You Can't See Me. He was a thug. He came out and he was like a. I mean, I think he started out. He was still a face.
Mm.
I don't think he's ever... Has John Cena ever gone heel?
Not that I can think of. I think it would ruin so many kids' like lives.
Yeah.
He always has to be a good guy.
For people who don't know, a face is a good guy, a heel is a bad guy in wrestling. Those are terms of wrestling. So a heel is a bad guy and a face is a good guy. The greatest heel turn. Do you have an opinion on the greatest heel turn in the history of wrestling?
Probably when Hogan went heel.
Yes.
I mean, really?
The NWO, when the whole
New World
you can
Order
call it the New World Order when Hogan went heel. I was watching when that happened, and I could not believe it.
Well, because he was America's wrestler.
Oh my God! Yeah, the crowd went nuts. They started whipping stuff into the ring. There was garbage everywhere, and they kept it going too. Like he and Nash and Scott Hall, they were all out there. If I remember correctly, X-Pac was also. That guy sucks, X-Pac. But it's the best. I mean, it's, you know, when they do heel turns like that, it's pretty cool, especially if it's a surprise. Cena should come back and be a heel.
I don't know.
Come on, man.
I mean, I guess. I don't really see why not, other than I think people would be, like, devastated.
Yeah.
But he's had such a film career at this point.
Oh, no. I mean, the only time he shows up at wrestling is under very specific, you know, circumstances. Maybe like a WrestleMania or something. He'll make an appearance. It's like The Rock. The Rock shows up at WrestleMania. The guy makes billions of dollars making movies. Doesn't need to go back to wrestling, but he does. So, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio as we are every weekday night into morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. Tom Hush is my producer. I'm Nick DiGilio, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Talk lines are open. Text lines are open. We're talking wrestling. 312-981-7200. Ranking at number 14 is Edge. Terrific wrestler.
Even better guitarist.
He's a terrific... Oh, come on, man. Speaking of guitarists, do you like Elias?
No.
I do.
Oh, my God. When he's sitting in the middle of the ring
it's
with
hilarious.
The guitar... Oh, God. I get it. It's funny. It's kind of
he's
funny.
He's also a good wrestler. He's good
he
in
is
the
a
ring.
Good wrestler.
Elias is good in the ring.
Terrible guitarist.
Oh, I think he's hilarious.
Nah.
He's over now, though.
Yeah, it's done.
It took a long time. No, I mean, he's over. Like, good. Like,
oh,
when you say someone's over, that means they're very popular with the crowd.
Yeah. No, yeah. He's
way over now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Edge. Tremendous wrestler. The R-rated superstar, as they called him. He had 11 world titles and 12 tag team titles. He gets a 9 out of 10 on his career. 8 out of 10 on his look. He had a rock star look that translated into a sleazy heel role that he played for much of his career. In-ring, he gets an 8 out of 10. Edge. 8 out of 10 on the mic skills. Edge was much better on the mic as a heel, as so many are, and as many promos during his feud with The Undertaker in particular will stand the test of time. Edge was surprisingly good at making the fans hate him. 7 out of 10 for marketability, despite the fact that he was venomously hated as a heel. This mark takes his due to two recent runs. He had two recent runs as a babyface. So, Edge.
Always liked him.
Let's see. Jimmy from Cary is texting in. You can text in, too. 312-981-7200. Jimmy from Cary says, favorite wrestler was Roddy Piper. Yeah. Best matches were Von Erichs versus the Freebirds. Well, the Von Erichs and the Freebirds were... Jimmy's right. Those matches with the Von Erichs and the Freebirds were unbelievable. The Freebirds were great. But yeah, Piper... I mean, you got to love Roddy Piper. Star of They Live, who, by the way, my favorite director of all time who directed They Live, celebrating a birthday today. Mr. John Carpenter's birthday today. Hi, Nick. Texting from England and listening to your show regarding wrestling. I love the Honky Tonk Man. Familiar with the Honky Tonk Man, Tim?
Honky Tonk Man. I'm not.
Google him. And you'll see how he's dressed.
Well, I'm... Oh, my God. Elvis?
Elvis, yeah.
Oh, my God. Look at the jawline on that guy.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's literally an Elvis suit with Elvis on it.
Yeah. He's the honky tonk man. He used to come out with a guitar.
Yeah.
When he made his entrance, he'd come out with a guitar.
He's got a great action figure too.
Oh, the honky tonk man ruled. You know, it's funny. Years and years ago, we went to, you know, I had friends who went to school in Champaign. And so we would go down and visit them and stay, you know, down there and basically drink. And they would have a giant Halloween party. Not quite as big as Southern Illinois. Southern Illinois they were legendary for their insanity Halloween parties out in the streets and stuff. They would block off streets. They did the same thing in Champaign. They would like block off a street so you could walk down all the people in costume. So my buddy Joe, who passed away, hey, listen, what the hell happened after that first album? My buddy Joe passed away. God bless his soul. He dressed as Elvis. He had the jumpsuit on and all that stuff. And we were walking around. I didn't dress up. I never really dressed up on Halloween. I've never been a big costume guy Halloween. So we're walking down the street, and you could tell the wrestling fans from people who are not wrestling fans, because wrestling fans were saying, "Hey, it's Honky Tonk Man," and other people were saying it's Elvis. So you could actually like. We had there, and by the way, at that time period, I think this was like Halloween of 1988 or something. At that time, there were more Elvis fans than non Elvis fans. I'm sorry, there were more Honky Tonk Man wrestling fans than there were Elvis fans in Champaign at that time. That's not a scientific thing, but you know, 708. Sends a text. You can too. Call or text us. Talking Wrestling, 312-981-7200. PhD, Pumpkinhead Deluxe. I don't know what that is. Should I know what that is? I'm a wrestling fan, but I don't know what Pumpkinhead Deluxe PhD. Oh, I see. All right. Because he had a PhD in Thugonomics. 815 area code. Bigger heel turn was Andre the Giant. No, that was a big heel turn, but not as big as Hogan. Hogan's heel turn, the NWO, the creation of the NWO, is the biggest and best heel turn in the history of wrestling. So, and then 864 says, I agree, Cena should be a heel. I think that would be a big move. Now he's a big movie star, though, you know, and I don't think he'd come back. But I would love to have seen John Cena as a heel. I think that would be a really big move. So, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're continuing here to talk about wrestling. We got more of the rankings of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And the text lines and phone lines are open for you at 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? It's Nick DiGilio, and we are here continuing till 4 o'clock. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200. Triple play Thursday, but that's not going to be a triple play. It's only going to be a double play. Who requested the Skinnerd?
That's coming to us from Scott in Streamwood.
Scott in Streamwood. Okay. Little Leonard Skinnerd. Every night slash morning, you pick the music that we play when we come back from commercials or when we come back from the news. Triple Play Thursday means you pick one artist and three songs. 312-981-7200. Okay. Rocky Johnson, who was a wrestling legend, father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, passed away at the age of 75. So we're talking about some of the best wrestlers of all time and some of our favorite wrestling moments. If you want to jump in, I love talking about wrestling. We haven't talked about wrestling in a while, so I love talking about it because I'm a big fan my whole life. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here is Trucker Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, this year I was watching, I don't watch wrestling as much as I used to, but NASCAR had their championship banquet week down in Nashville this year, and they must have had like a Raw or something wrestling event that a lot of the drivers went to. And I don't know the guy, but whoever had the 24/7 belt, he came up and was talking to some of the drivers, and he was talking to Kyle Busch, and Kyle Busch was a champion. Well, he walked behind him, and Michael Waltrip was talking to him, and Michael ripped open his suit coat, and he had on a striped referee jacket, you know, shirt on.
Yeah.
And Busch pinned him, took off the belt, so Busch had a NASCAR championship belt and a wrestling championship belt for about 12 hours before the other guy caught up to him on the streets.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
I don't know if you saw that or not.
That's hilarious. No, I guess I missed that. But the whole angle, the concept of this 24-hour championship thing, I think is hilarious. I think it's hilarious. You got to defend it 24 hours a day anywhere you are. Could happen anywhere.
Yep, as long as there's a ref somewhere nearby,
you can be
hit.
Exactly.
That's why they did Waltrip with the shirt on, because in NASCAR, Kyle Busch's nickname is Rowdy, so.
Oh, you know, okay.
But it was pretty good.
That's funny.
You know, I mean, it was just part of their NASCAR stuff for the week.
Yeah, that's funny.
So,
all right, Rich, thanks.
Yeah. All right, yep, bye-bye.
There you go. That's funny. Let's see. This is Jeff from Mundelein. Nick, did you ever watch AWA wrestling on Channel 26 on Sunday morning? Yeah, we mentioned it a little bit earlier on. It was before WWE. The Burt Wyman Ford commercials were hilarious. I love George the Animal Steel. My favorite tag team were the Killer Bees. My favorite Junkyard Dog, the Rockers, Ravishing Rick Rude. I remember being devastated when Eric Von Erich committed suicide. That's Javon from Dallas. The Von Erichs, just such a tragic. So many tragic stories with the Von Erichs. It's hard to believe that all of that happened to one family. 864 says, you remember when Stone Cold Steve Austin was in an angle with Brian Pillman in an episode of Monday Night Raw, and Pillman's got a gun, thought it was a real gun. No, I don't. I don't remember that. Was it my dad?
Yeah.
Hey, Dad.
Hi, how are you?
All right, sir. What's going on?
We were at the Marriott in Rosemont.
Yeah.
And we were there, and Ric Flair and Ted DiBiase came in with a blonde in each arm, sat down. I went over and asked for an autograph, and they signed it, Ric Flair, and Ted DiBiase put the big dollar sign.
Yeah.
With his name after it.
Yeah.
So we met them, both of them. Yeah. They're all right.
You're talking you and Mom, right?
Yeah.
At the Marriott in Rosemont. They probably just had a match at the Horizon.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. And we've seen Andre the Giant was there.
Yeah.
And he was getting on the elevator, and he was walking with crutches and that.
Oh,
he was hurting so bad.
Yeah, no, he had a hard time. I mean, you know, when your body's that big, that's why he passed away so young.
Yeah.
So, all right, Dad, thanks for the story.
All right, Nick.
See you later.
Bye.
It's my dad. Hanging out with Ric Flair and Ted DiBiase.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of thought we were going to get a bonus joke for a second.
Oh.
But
got to wait till Monday for that.
No, I got to wait for the good stuff.
13 on here, ranking it up here. And it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline studio. Text lines, phone lines are open. We're talking wrestling. And we're continuing in that here on the Nick DiGilio show. Tom Hush is my producer. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Next year, coming in at 13, is Kurt Angle. Love Kurt Angle. Love him. 8 out of 10 for his career. 8 out of 10 for his look. 9 out of 10 for his in-ring skills. He's phenomenal in the ring. 7 out of 10 on the mic. 8 out of 10 for marketability. Now, you were probably too young. Do you remember when Kurt Angle and Stone Cold were both heels and they were hanging out together? And Stone Cold was singing songs all the time, and Kurt Angle was wearing like little cowboy hats. I thought it was hilarious, but Stone Cold fans hated it.
Oh yeah,
because he became like insanely goofy. He was
really
like
goofy.
He and Kurt Angle were both goofball heels, but the stuff cracked me up. Just cracked me up, and I thought it was hilarious, but. Fans were not happy about it. That was the whole. That was when the what? What? When when Stone Cold started doing the what, which audiences still do. You know, if you watch Raw, you watch SmackDown, the crowds still do the what. That was, you know, when Stone Cold would interrupt everybody. What? What? Always thought it was funny. 12, Chris Jericho. I love Chris Jericho. I think he's great. 8 out of 10 career, 7 out of 10 look. The Ayatollah of rock and rolla.
Oh, yeah.
8 out of 10 in-ring, 9 out of 10 on mic skills. He's phenomenal on the mic. I love Jericho.
You know who hasn't been mentioned yet that I think should be mentioned?
Who?
Scott Steiner.
Oh, man, please.
Scott Steiner.
Yeah.
We played a little bit of the Rock's promo.
Yeah.
May I play some of Scott Steiner talking about sacrifice?
Okay.
Joe.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at Small Joe, and you can see that statement is not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak, and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. And then you add Kurt Angle to the mix, your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me, and he's not even going to try. So, Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance, and you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at sacrifice.
Potentially one of the greatest wrestling promos of all time.
Can you, if we're going to talk, because we got a Blackhawks Express coming up. We got weather and a Blackhawks Express coming up. What did I do with the weather? I think I threw the weather out. Anyway, I'll find it. Anyway, find some Flair. Find some Ric Flair. Because there's nobody, and as far as I'm concerned, there's nobody better on the mic ever in the history of wrestling. If you could find the one where he says, my shoes cost more than your house, that's one of my Ric Flair. My shoes cost more than your house. coming in at number 11 here on the rankings, Triple H. Career, 9 out of 10. Look, 8 out of 10. In-ring, 7 out of 10. Mike skills, 8 out of 10. Marketability, 8 out of 10. And now, you know, he's part of the McMahon family now.
So,
I have to get the weather. Oh, okay. You're going to give me another one. Okay, we'll do that. Hitting number 10 here in the rankings is Sting, who was mentioned earlier. 9 out of 10 for his career. 8 out of 10 for his look. Before he became the Scorpion, Sting's gimmicks were hit and miss. In-ring, 8 out of 10. Mike skills, 7 out of 10. Marketability, 8 out of 10 for Sting. Yeah. Bret the Hitman Hart comes in at number 9. I think that might be a little low. I think Bret the Hitman Hart's one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of pro wrestling. The Hitman was a five-time WWF champion and was the biggest star in the company for most of the 90s. Although he never drew the same money as Hogan, he did help preserve WWF after the steroid scandal, and he contributed to the wholesome image McMahon was trying to create. So his career gets an 8 out of 10. His look gets a 7 out of 10. In-ring, 10 out of 10, of course. Of course, 10 out of 10 for his in-ring skills. Bret Hart's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Mike's skills, 7 out of 10. It says Bret's weaknesses is always on the mic. Although he worked hard to improve, he never came across as a natural. Marketability, 8 out of 10. Hart was immensely popular with his home fans in Canada and also around the world. There it is. Okay. 8 on the list is Shawn Michaels. Career, 10 out of 10. His look, 6 out of 10. In-ring, 10 out of 10. Shawn Michaels, one of the best wrestlers of all time. Mike skills, 8 out of 10. Marketability, 6 out of 10. Okay. Got some weather for you, and then we got a Blackhawks Express. We'll take a break. We got a Blackhawks Express. And then we will continue and finish the rankings of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Actually, no, it's
not. It's I keep doing this. I always say I have, because I have these things printed out that I want to, you know, I want to make sure that I remember to tell everybody at the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. But it's actually going to be from Channel 9 News that we will be hearing coming up. Let's see. We're getting back into wrestling. If you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. Did you find any Ric Flair?
Yeah, I think I found the one you were talking about.
Okay.
Where he's talking about how much money he makes.
Okay. He often does.
Let's see. I think this might be the one. Let's take a listen.
The heat is on. Here's the world champion, Ric Flair. The heat is on, you know. I got to have David Crockett over here for this. Because David Crockett, the illustrious announcer and vice president of Jim Crockett Promotions, always likes to tell the wrestling public something special when Ric Flair gets knocked down, or Luger gets put to sleep, or Arn and Tully trip over their feet by accident. Come on, David, explain what just happened on national TV to the legend Dusty Rhodes and to Heads of Stone Ronnie Garvin. What just happened? They got the holy you-know-what beat out of them nationwide. And I don't mind telling you, I was wearing these $600 custom-made lizard shoes and this $13,000 Rolex when it happened. That's why I'm Ric Flair. That's why Luger's the U.S. champion. And that's why Arn and Tully are going
that's
to
not the exact one, but he's you know, I don't know how many times he's talked about how expensive his shoes are and his Rolex watch and jet flying. Coming in ranked at number 7 is Rowdy Roddy Piper, a legend. Career 8 out of 10, look 7 out of 10. 8 out of 10 for the in-ring, 10 out of 10 on the mic skills, of course, and 8 out of 10 of markability. Ranked number 6, the son of the wrestler who passed away, The Rock. 7 out of 10 for his career, 8 out of 10 for his look, 8 out of 10 for in-ring, 10 out of 10 because he's the most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
I forget, Nick, what kind of shoes do you usually wear?
What?
What kind of shoes do you usually wear?
Converse.
Oh, really? Because
my shoes cost more than your house.
It's one of my favorite lines of all time. marketability for The Rock, 9 out of 10. Randy Macho Man Savage ranked at number 5, 8 out of 10 for his career. His look, 8 out of 10. In-ring skills, 8 out of 10. Mic skills, 9 out of 10. Marketability, 9 out of 10. Number 4, Ric Flair. No. 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 That's 3 spots too low. That's 3 spots too low. Ric Flair, 10 out of 10 for his career. 8 out of 10 for his look. 8 out of 10 for his in-ring skills. 10 out of 10 on the mic.
Well, duh.
Yeah. And then 7 out of 10 for marketability. Have you ever go on YouTube and watch Ric Flair's flops?
No.
you should watch it because it's just a video of him doing the flop where like he'll get hit and then he walks 2 feet and plants himself straight down.
I'll put that on after I watch that bushwhacking material.
You got to watch the bushwhackers, man. 3, Hulk Hogan. 10 out of 10 for his career, 10 out of 10 for his look, 5 out of 10 for his in-ring skills, yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
8 out of 10 on the mic, 10 out of 10 on marketability. Number 2, The Undertaker.
Oof.
God, 10 out of 10 for his career, 10 out of 10 for the look, 8 out of 10 for in-ring. That's way too high, giving him an 8 for his in-ring skills. Mic skills, 6 out of 10. Marketability, 10 out of 10. And then ranked at number 1 is Stone Cold Steve Austin. 10 out of 10 for his career, arguably the most popular wrestler to ever lace up a pair of boots. And his status as a first ballot Hall of Famer is justified. Many world title reigns and more. He kept the WWF going in the Monday Night Wars. For his look, 8 out of 10. In-ring, 8 out of 10.
Mike skills, 9 out of 10. The two separate promos that transformed the career of Steve Austin from Ted DiBiase's lackey to the most popular wrestler of all time. He had a promo with ECW after he was fired by WCW that put him on the pro wrestling map. And the second more famous of the two promos where Steve Austin coined the most successful catchphrase in wrestling terms, in history terms of merchandise, was Austin 316.
Yeah.
He came up with that just on the spot.
Austin 316.
Austin 316.
Because isn't it, it's John? Is it John 316?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Austin 316, that's a Stone Cold just kicked your ass. 9 out of marketability, 10 out of 10. So Stone Cold ranks number one.
There you go.
That's not crazy.
You can't be mad about that.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I personally would have put Piper. I would have put Rowdy Roddy, as number one. But I can see that. Stone Cold. Can't argue that. So, all right. Hey, tomorrow on the show, we got werewolves, we got chupacabras, we got Mothmen. Ooh. So we're going to talk cryptozoology with Linda Godfrey. And we all have our regular Friday features as well.